It's time to go back in time.
Tyler Breeze beat Ty Dillinger with the beauty shot. I love the way they've turned Breeze from just purely a comedy character into a serious threat to the title without sacrificing too much of what makes the character so great. I almost feel he'd be better off getting a long run with the title on NXT instead of a call up to the main roster, because once he does, he'll just be jobbed out on main event. You know, within a month, he'll be jobbed out on main event. I guarantee it. So for him to get, let's say, a shot to run with the belt for 6 months or 9 months or whatever on this show and build that character and evolve the character even more might actually be a better career course for him.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Happy Easter to those who celebrate. I want to thank Samarth in our Facebook group for reminding me about that clip you heard there. That was from Sound Off 344 in September 2014. So a year and a half ago, I said that. And lo and behold, it took 3 months instead of one. But Tyler Breeze has lost to Zack Ryder and Jack Swagger on main event recently. What a waste. This is episode 432 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Easter Sunday, March 27, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. We have reached the end of our WCW countdown. The last 15 weeks have been a lot of fun. I've had fun going back and rewatching all of these matches. And this weekend marks 15 years since the final Nitro and the death of WCW. That was the whole point of doing this list. I timed it so that it would end the very same weekend of the 15-year anniversary. We have one match left, and not only is the match itself a lot of fun, but I'm going to get into a topic of great controversy as a result. It's a great topic of great controversy for a lot of people. So I would definitely stick around for that. If you don't check out all of the WCW matches, this is one you might want to stick around for, so we'll do that later in the show. But first, I have a big announcement to share with everybody. I put this out on Twitter and Facebook a couple days ago, and the response so far has been very positive. Very excited to announce it for the first time. We're going to give this a shot. We're doing a Sound Off podcast slash meetup at a local sports bar in Dallas over WrestleMania weekend. So actually the day after WrestleMania, that Monday, April 4th, 11 a.m. local time, we're going to be doing a live show from Frankie's Sports Bar downtown in Dallas. 1303 Main Street is the address. We're going to be doing an actual Sound Up podcast. It'll be a roundtable format. So myself, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, and we are inviting all of you. If you are in town for WrestleMania, if you live in Dallas or anywhere in Texas and you want to make it out, you are cordially invited. You are invited to invite other people. This is an open event. It's a public event. It's a sports bar, so there's no cover charge. Age should not be an issue if you are not 21, because I think just the time of day, I think it'll be fine. We have the entire, what they call the underground, which is an area downstairs at the bar where normally they'll have comedy acts and other such things. There's a stage, you know, there's a bar area, plenty of seats. So we will have the underground area to do our show. We're working with the bar. They're very excited about this. They may be more excited than we are. But it's something I'm looking forward to. We've talked about doing this before. We've always toyed with the idea. The interest has always been there. I mean, I've gotten messages from people not so much worried about you know, the podcast aspect of it. They just wanted to have a meetup. And, you know, schedule-wise, it never worked out. I end up meeting a lot of you guys when I go to WrestleMania. It's always a lot of fun, but more often than not, it's you seeking me out. I still don't understand how in a stadium of 80,000 people, I think last year I had like half a dozen people who just picked me off, or they would send me tweets that said, "I see you." And I'm like, "How do you see me? There's 80,000 people here." So I figured, you know, let's do something formal so we can get everybody together. It'll be a good chance, I think, for a lot of the fans of the show. Especially the ones who maybe interact in the Facebook group, you guys can meet as well for the first time. It's not just about me. I mean, you guys can meet and hang out. And this is going to be our post-WrestleMania wrap-up show. So we'll be talking about the entire WrestleMania card. We'll take live questions from the audience, so we'll throw it to you guys. You guys can participate in the show. What we'd like to try to do, and this is still up in the air, people have asked me, you're calling it Sound Off Live in Dallas, is the show going to air live? We're going to try to stream the show live, maybe on you know, Mixler or something, but we won't know until next weekend, only because we're not sure what the internet situation or the Wi-Fi situation is going to be like at the bar, especially in the downstairs area. I would imagine that it should be fine, but it may not be. And so if we don't have strong internet, then we're not going to, you know, we're not going to be able to, or we're not going to bother streaming live, because then there's going to be all sorts of issues. And so what we'll end up doing is, yeah, we'll do the show like we normally do it, where we record it, and then as soon as it's over, we'll edit, we'll upload, and then everybody can download it or stream it at that point. So there is the possibility that this could air live or stream live, and if it does, you guys, I'll make sure you get all that information. But just know that that's not 100%. We're going to try. And also, the invitation that we put together on the Facebook fan page, you can invite other people to the invitation. Like I said, it's a public event. It's not private or exclusive or anything like that. I would ask that you only RSVP to the invite on Facebook if you're planning to actually physically be there at Frankie's. That's not an invite like, oh, you're going to listen to the show, so let me RSVP. We're trying to use that to get some semblance of a headcount, which is approaching 50 at this point, which is awesome. And so if you are going to RSVP, just know that we're looking for RSVPs from people who are actually going to either be there or who think they may be able to attend in person, just so we can get a head count, maybe let the bar know. And again, you can find that invite. It's on the fan page on Facebook. I'll share it on Twitter. We really couldn't ask for a better partner at Frankie's. I mean, they've been... and I also want to thank Noah, because he has been instrumental in helping to put this whole thing together and kind of being the conduit between you know, me and the bar and everything else. So they're really pumped up for it. I'm pumped up for it. Again, it's cool. There's no minimum requirement. You got to show up and you have to buy a drink. You have to buy food. I would encourage you to do so, because the bar is being very kind to us, letting us use their space. So by all means, you know, get food, get drinks, and have a good time. And we'll see how this goes. You know, if this goes well, if we have a pretty decent turnout, there's always the possibility we can do more of these down the road. I already had a few people message me on Facebook and say, you got to do one in Brooklyn. You got to do one for SummerSlam. We'll certainly consider it, but let's take it one step at a time. We'll see how things go in Dallas. And if it goes well, we'll do more of them in the future. So looking forward to that. Hope to see a lot of you there. I want to talk about the Evolve show, Evolve 57. Last weekend was here in Brooklyn. Apparently this was an iPay-per-view. I had no idea it was airing live on iPay-per-view. We were, myself and Brian Blade went to the show. We were front row directly opposite the hard camera. I had a couple people messaging me saying, I think I see you. That's when I realized, oh, he must be on TV. I have to say, coming out of the show, it was a lot of fun. This is my first Evolve show. I was most impressed by Matt Riddle. He and Chris Hero had the best match on the entire show, I thought. Hero is, people have asked me, what does Chris Hero look like in person? I see all these pictures of him. Hero is definitely bigger. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I would say don't judge a book by its cover. Okay, the guy did two Shawn Michaels kip-ups during that match and like I said, had the best match on the entire show. He's still a very athletic guy. He can go. He's one of the best out there. Riddle beat him. Big win for Matt Riddle over Chris Hero. And then later on, Riddle came back out. He called out William Regal. William Regal was at both Evolve shows last weekend. There was one in Queens where he made an announcement about the Global Cruiserweight Tournament and said that some of those matches would be taking place in Evolve. So he was on the second show, the Brooklyn show. He comes out, and Riddle says to Regal, listen, bro, it's like the California kid here, I want a WWE contract. And Regal very politely told him, don't call me bro. That's number one. And why don't you win the Evolve title first and actually do something before asking for a contract? So some backstory on Riddle. Matt Riddle was a UFC fighter. They released him. He had a tryout with WWE. They were very impressed. They were impressed enough with him that they sent him to work in Evolve, because he was very green. I mean, he was a wrestling fan, but he wasn't a wrestler. Like, this was his first foray into pro wrestling. And they have the relationship now with Gabe and Evolve, and they sent him, basically sent him over there like, you know, wink, wink, why don't you kind of get this kid going and give him some seasoning, and then eventually he'll make his way over to NXT. I assume that's the arrangement. And so anyway, he went to Evolve, and I can tell you, like, if this guy is this good after only, like, a year in the wrestling business, he could be a gigantic star. Except for one possible sticking point. Because I was curious, like, why was he released from UFC? I don't think he was unbeaten or anything, but he seemed, like, I looked at his record, I looked him up, I'm reading up on the guy, and he wasn't, like, a bad fighter. The only potential sticking point, he got cut from UFC because he failed two drug tests in the same year, both for marijuana. And there were people even on this show who were chanting marijuana at him, and he just kind of shrugged his shoulders, like, as if to say, yeah, you're right. It's good that he has a sense of humor about it. I don't know that WWE would have such a sense of humor about that. I know they do test for pot. Whatever your opinion is on pot, whether it should or shouldn't be punishable under the wellness policy, and it's not as serious as, you know, other hard drugs and stuff like that. The fact is, it is illegal. They do test for it. And if he goes to WWE and he starts failing wellness tests for pot, that could have a negative effect on his career. But I hope not, because the guy is really good. He reminded me, I'm looking at him and I'm going, he reminds me of someone. He reminds me of a mix between Kerry Von Erich and Kevin Von Erich. So he's basically the long-lost Von Erich boy here. He's got the same hair as Kerry, and he wrestles barefoot like Kevin used to. I think that's what reminded me of Kevin. It's the fact that he has no boots, which also could be, I think that could end up being a problem for him. Like, Rusev also, for the longest time, was not wearing any boots, and now he is. And the reason he wears boots is because he got hurt. You know, Jimmy Snuka. I don't know if he started wearing boots when he came back to WWE because he got hurt or because they told him to, but he also ended up wearing boots. All these barefoot guys, except maybe Yokozuna. I think he always went without boots. But most of them end up wearing boots because it's a lot easier to get hurt if you're not wearing anything. So anyway, I was very impressed by him. Zack Sabre Jr. was on the show. I keep hearing about this guy. I've only seen a couple of his matches on YouTube, so I got to see him in person. He beat Drew Gulak. Sabre reminds me a lot of Daniel Bryan. Not just his style, like he's a technical guy and all this stuff, just his mannerisms, the way he moves around. The only difference with him and Bryan is Zack Sabre has a Union Jack on his ass. That's about the only difference between the two of them. And he's having a match with Kurt Angle at a Rev Pro show this June. So that should be interesting. Although Zack Sabre Jr. against, 2002 Kurt Angle would have been a much better match. But still, that's a pretty big match. Tommaso Ciampa was on the show. Of course, he's been on NXT a lot lately. TJ Perkins was there. Manic from TNA. I don't know how TNA ever let this guy go. They even had Hulk Hogan endorse him once on TV. It's like I'm watching this and I'm going, you mean to tell me that Hulk Hogan wasn't being sincere when he praised TJ Perkins? Or when he called Austin Aries on Impact once one of the best wrestlers of all time? Or something ridiculous like that. It's like, even if you believe that Austin Aries is one of the best of all time, like, for that to come out of Hulk Hogan's mouth of all people, could you possibly think of something more insincere for him to say? It's like, Hulk Hogan, all of a sudden, he was like on Nitro every week because he was the general manager or whatever the hell they were calling him. And so, he had to praise all of these guys. And you know in his head, he's just thinking like, you know, these guys barely come up to my nipples, brother. Like, okay, you know, like, he doesn't believe any of this bullshit. But there he was. He was praising Manic, and he was praising Austin Aries on TV. This is the greatest of all time, brother. Like, ugh. Anyway. Johnny Gargano teamed with Drew Galloway, speaking of TNA, the new TNA world champion. They are the Evolve Tag Team Champions. They beat Team Tremendous. Galloway was late in arriving from Orlando. Gargano came out earlier in the show and said he was still in the air, but he was on his way. And I thought it was all part of an angle, but apparently it was legit. I don't know if he was actually in the air at that point, but he was trying to make his way from the airport to the building. So they ended up putting this match in the main event spot. And once he got there, Galloway, he was funny, he got on the mic, he said, I had to apologize to the cab driver for getting naked and changing into my gear in the back seat. So hopefully that guy got a nice cleaning for his car after that. He did not have the TNA title with him, by the way. But it was interesting seeing the TNA champion teaming with an NXT guy. I also have to thank Galloway for warning us for our impending doom before. There was a suicide dive coming. I don't know what it is when I go to this building. I go to these indie shows, and I'm in the front row. It's probably my first mistake. I should spare myself and just pay for second row next time. But I'm in the first row, and it's always the heavy guys. It's always the fat guys who do like a suicide dive or a plancha out of the ring. And it's not like they have these, you know, the black barricades you see on WWE TV that are pretty thick. Like, these are just basic, regular metal guardrails. I mean, the guy last time, the one who slammed into my knee, I took a picture of it. I put it online. You had to see. He mangled steel. That was how hard the impact was when this guy landed on the railing that time. The steel, he broke the guardrail. So this time, they were smart. They taped that shit up. I mean, these metal guardrails where they were kind of joined together, they had so much masking tape, or not masking tape, but duct tape around them. And I have to say, when the guy hit the guardrail, the railing didn't move all that much. So I think it was a combination of Drew being outside in front of us saying, like, watch out. He actually told us. He told us the spot in advance. He's like, this guy's doing a suicide dive. We're like, okay. So that and the tape saved us from a bad night. But yeah, man, I just had flashbacks of that show. Stockade. That was the guy who crashed into my knee that time. I had flashbacks when I saw this guy coming off the ropes. I'm like, oh, shit. And I just thought, you know, and I remember after that happened, I went on the New York Wrestling Connection website, because NYWC, it's almost like this network of different indie promotions here in the area, because it wasn't an NYWC show. It was like a Five Borough Wrestling show, but I think Five Borough Wrestling is part, maybe, of the NYWC. Whatever it was. I remember after that show, I went on the website. I go, I got to find the roster. I want to see how much this guy weighs. This guy, he's got to be every bit of 400 pounds. And I go on the website, and they have his weight listed at like 280. And I'm just like, yeah, right. Yeah, right. 280, give or take 100 pounds, maybe. 280 my ass. But I had a lot of fun. Riddle is getting an Evolved title match with the champion, Timothy Thatcher, WrestleMania weekend in Dallas. Chris Hero challenged Zack Sabre Jr. on this show to a match in Dallas. So now I'm kind of bummed I'm not going to any of these Evolved shows. I think they're all sold out, or it's like, you know, standing room only or something, so I'm not going to be there. But my first Evolve experience, thumbs up. If you've never been to an Evolve show, check it out. It's just an old school type of wrestling, some of the matches anyway. It's like a lot of catch wrestling and stuff. It can get very slow. It can get a little, you know, a little dull at times, but these guys are out there beating the piss out of each other. And, you know, the matches kind of built and they built and they built. And by the time they got to the finish, you know, it got pretty exciting there down the stretch. And they have a lot of guys who you are going to see in NXT within the next, you know, I would say in the next few years, but I think really in the next 6 to 12 months. And if so, I think NXT is in pretty good shape. One more note here on local indie wrestling. I just want to give a shout out to NGW, New Generation Wrestling. I've been to their shows before. They have a show coming up called Conviction at the Knights of Columbus in Brooklyn, New York, Saturday, April 2nd. I will be away in Dallas, but if you are in the area, 3915 Flatlands Avenue in Brooklyn is the address. Bell time, 7:30 p.m. Tickets, $20 at the door. Check them out if you want to see some good indie wrestling. Audible, since I forgot to mention that. People have been signing up at a pretty good clip over the last couple of weeks for Audible using our link. So I want to say thank you to everybody who's been either using it or sharing it with others. AudibleTrial.com/Solomonster is the link. Like I've said before, it's a win-win situation. Audible's a pretty cool service. If you're into audiobooks, you want to try an audiobook for the first time, they've got over 180,000 of them. There's a ton of wrestling books on there. Doesn't have to be wrestling. You use our link, you sign up, which you have to do first. Once you sign up, you can sample the service for 30 days. So if you're using the service and you're not entirely happy with it, or you're like, I don't know if this is something I want to keep using, If it's day 29, doesn't matter. You're under no obligation. You don't have to pay a dime if you cancel before the 30 days are up. But you get one free audiobook. So even if you do cancel, you get to keep that book no matter what. So use our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself a free book. Try out the service. Maybe you'll like it. But if it's not your thing, you get a free book out of it. We've got new shirts up in the Pro Wrestling Tee store, prowrestlingtees.com. Those, the pair of 1992 theme shirts I mentioned last week. We've got 24 shirts in the store. A lot of you have been buying shirts as well. Thank you very much. And if you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. I want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez. Good old Loose Cannon. True Grit, Tim Goggin, The Reflection of Perfection, Abraham Lara, The Bronx Bomber, Robert Hordeens, Dream Chaser, Chauncey Curry, Ladies Man, Levi Daly, Rodney Hot Rod Cologne, Thomas the Promise, Murphy, Super Supreme, Gus Gomez, Ready, Aim, Fire, Earl Alford, Chris Miracle Man, Mirabal, The Symbol of Excellence, Justin Symbidis, Captain of Carnage, Christopher Gomez, Slingblade, Shane McDonough, who just started a new podcast with her boyfriend Christian called Wrestling Time, where they talk about Raw, NXT, Total Divas, bunch of other things. You get the male and the female perspective. See, I give you the male perspective here on this show. I can't give you the female perspective. They give you the male and female perspective. And I could be wrong, but it may well be the only wrestling podcast out there. And if it's not, it's one of the few, but it may be the only one hosted by a couple. Or at least a male-female couple. So show them some love. They're on Podbean at Wrestling Times CS. That's for Christian and Shane. WrestlingTimesCS.podbean.com. You can also find the show on iTunes. I hope to see both you guys again in Dallas for the live sound-off. And so thank you to everybody who made a donation. If you want to get a shout-out on next week's Roundtable show, we're going to be doing two shows in Dallas, prediction show and then the Postmania show. If you want to get a shout-out on either one of those shows, this is the week to make a donation, so you can do so on thesolomonster.com. We're going to actually get into a mixed martial arts story here real quick. I know not everybody is a big MMA fan, but this was a big deal, at least to those of us here in New York, at least because this thing is dragged on for so damn long. Mixed martial arts was finally legalized in the state of New York this week. It only took 20 years for it to happen. 50 states in this country, MMA is legal in 49 of them. New York was the only holdout. Think about that. Year after year after year, it would pass. All of these different committees, the bill would. It would pass, it would pass, it would pass. And then it would come to the assembly, and the assembly wouldn't even vote on it. And then last year, they had the votes for it. They had enough votes for people who wanted to vote yes to legalize MMA, but they stalled and they stalled and they ran out of time in the legislative session. Because that's what our politicians do. They stall and they stall and they stall and they don't do their fucking job. They wouldn't even take a vote. So it needed 76 votes to pass. The state assembly approved it by a vote, finally, of 113-25. And speaking of that, if you live outside this country, and we have a lot of UK fans, if you live outside the US and you have no idea how someone like Donald Trump could be doing so well in this election, look no further than the New York State Assembly. Is it any wonder why people would gravitate to someone like Trump over your typical politician? I was watching that hearing. They were streaming it live on the internet, okay? I was watching that hearing. It made me embarrassed to be from New York. One of the assemblymen, apparently I wasn't aware of this, is the brother of Rosie O'Donnell. Speaking of Donald Trump, he's the brother of Rosie O'Donnell. And to her credit, okay, Rosie was actually for legalizing MMA. Her brother wasn't. And so he stood up to give this, you know, this speech. He said he was going home after the hearing to take a long shower for even discussing the thought of legalizing MMA. He called MMA gay porn, but with a different kind of ending. So he's a comedian now, too. He called MMA an alleged sport. There was another assembly person, I forgot his name. he likened MMA to slavery. Yes, slavery. And police brutality. Somehow he managed to work both of those things in there. Look up a picture of what this guy was wearing, by the way. He looks like fucking Dr. Evil. And what's sad about this, there were some people who brought up legitimate concerns, like they talked about brain trauma and what might be down the road. But there was one person who brought up the name Muhammad Ali, I guess to illustrate what could happen to fighters later in life. I would love to know if that person and any of these assembly people who mention stuff like that, like head trauma, and again, there are legitimate concerns there. But they seem so concerned, oh, what about brain trauma? What about Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or these problems they may have later in life? I don't see any of these people voting to ban boxing from the state of New York. Boxing is legal. You have amateur boxing, pro boxing. Boxing's been around forever. Brings a lot of money into the state. I don't see them crowing about banning boxing. The double standard there is amazing to me. How do you rationalize one but not the other if that's your main argument? If your only argument is about head trauma, how do you rationalize that? Because the fact is, boxing has scrambled far more brains than MMA has. So anyway, the point of all this is, if you watch this hearing, it's no wonder people hate politicians. This was a fucking clown show. I was embarrassed to be watching it. But at the end of the day, thankfully, there were enough sensible minds to pass it. So now it goes to the governor. The governor is all but assured to sign this thing into law. UFC is already planning its first show at Madison Square Garden later this year. And we'll see. You know what? It's not too far-fetched to think that at some point, CM Punk could be having his first MMA match at Madison Square Garden. I wonder if that would make him the first person to ever wrestle for WWE. Actually, he won a WWE title in Madison Square Garden, and then also fight in Madison Square Garden. It probably would. That'd be pretty cool. So we'll see. Sting. I mentioned last week, I did a whole column for SE Scoops about Sting and TMZ reporting that sources close to him say that his career is over, it's done. The official announcement could come as early as his Hall of Fame speech next weekend in Dallas. TMZ, they kind of ambushed him. They put a camera in his face. I don't know where he was. Sting was getting into a car somewhere. And they asked him about that. He denied it. He said, nope, I feel fine. Not retiring. Thank you. And he got in his car and he left. Very brief. Well, since then, Sting has been interviewed by WWE.com. I think he was interviewed by IGN. And interestingly enough, neither of these interviews, none of these articles now that have since come out with him, include any such denial. So what he told TMZ in the camera that day, he did not say in any of these other interviews. Now, if I'm him and TMZ is spreading these lies and it's not true, why not just come out? Or they flat out asked him the question, why not respond and say, no, it's a false report, it's not true. He never says that. What did he say? Instead, he used the old Sting line, the only thing for sure about Sting is nothing's for sure. No denial. And I think that speaks volumes, because I believe it's true. I think he is done. I think he just didn't want it to get out. He wants to make the announcement himself. I think there's a very good chance it may come in the Hall of Fame speech, or it may not, because maybe in his mind, he just wants to keep his options open. You know, the other thing he's made very clear, and he said it in the article on WWE.com, is he badly wanted and still wants that match against The Undertaker. And he wanted it this year in Texas at WrestleMania, figuring this will be my last match. I'll get to wrestle Taker in Texas, and that'll be it. I'll be done. That wasn't necessarily WWE's plan. Sting said that was his plan. It's not like they were in discussions for that match. That's the match he wanted. I think WWE wanted the match with Cena, so I don't think it would have happened either way. But that's the match that Sting wanted. So I'm just saying, for all the people who said, oh, he's denied it, if you read between the lines here, you know, he could have come out a lot stronger, and he didn't, because, you know, he was ambushed that day, and I think maybe he was a little startled, and he denied it, but then when he gets asked about it, point blank, he gives these wishy-washy answers. So I think the original TMZ report is probably true, but I guess we'll find out soon enough. And I don't know what is going on with Daniel Bryan. I've been asked about that this week, but it doesn't sound good, and I hope everything is okay. Friday night, they had a house show here at Madison Square Garden. It was supposed to be Daniel Bryan Appreciation Night. But that was postponed. WWE announced that Bryan had requested time off, and they granted it to him. They also took him off his access signing at WrestleMania. They replaced him with Shawn Michaels. He's been pulled off the European tour that he was supposed to be on next month. Pro Wrestling Sheet, which is Ryan Satin's site, they broke the news that Brie Bella is retiring earlier than expected, in part because of some kind of medical issue that Bryan is dealing with right now. Looks like she may be finishing up on Raw next Monday. That could be her final in-ring date for WWE. She's still going to do Total Divas and all that stuff, so if you're a Nikki Bella and a Brie Bella fan, you'll still get your dose of Bella drama and all that bullshit on Total Divas. You'll be happy to hear that. But she will no longer be wrestling. She is finishing up. And all I can say is, you know, hopefully it's nothing serious. It's one thing to hear that, oh, Nick, you know, Brie Bella's going to retire early. When you read that Brie Bella's retiring earlier than expected, in part because there may be something wrong with her husband, that's concerning. And, I don't know what the issue could be. Maybe he's depressed. I mean, that wouldn't really be all that surprising. I mean, the guy put on a brave face last month, but, I mean, that's some heavy shit to be laid upon you when you're told that you can't do what you love to do anymore. And we know that Bryan, he's admitted it. He's talked about how he was going for all these tests. He was adamant that he was going to wrestle again. He was not done. He was not finished. And then he claims he got that one test result back that was very alarming, and he made the decision himself that I'm done. And I think, again, he also knew that WWE wasn't going to clear him. So I think it's a Sting situation where, you know, they could end up coming out and admitting that, well, the doctor said such and such, and so I had to make the tough decision. And I want people to understand that that may be true. Maybe they finally find religion and they come to realize that, you know what, this is not good, and I need to just call it quits. But people need to remember that at the end of the day, if WWE says, we're not going to let you wrestle, then you're not going to wrestle. And there is not anything you can do about that. Unless you want to just ask for your release and go wrestle somewhere else, and I don't see Sting going to wrestle anywhere else, and Bryan's locked into a contract, he's not going anywhere. So I think WWE in these situations makes their decision a hell of a lot easier if they don't just make the decision for them. But Bryan was adamant that he was going to come back, and then almost instantaneously something happened, and he said, well, I guess I'm done. I should go out there and make a speech and make it official. So that's some heavy shit to get laid down upon you when that happens. Again, now you're home all the time. Your wife is still on the road, so you're not together all the time. I mean, again, I have no idea if that has anything to do with any of this. I'm just speculating here when I say depression. It's the first thing that popped in my head. Because I think his neck is okay, and again, he was fine. I mean, he was talking about the concussions and everything, but it's not as though he said, well, I'm having migraines, or I'm still having seizures. You know, it sounded like physically he was okay. I'm trying to, like, rack my brain. What could this be? Who knows? But I would be surprised if the guy wasn't depressed. How can you not be? And by the way, to the people I saw celebrating after this story came out, because, you know, that means no more Brie Bella in WWE. Let's throw a party. You know, the woman is leaving to be with her husband, who apparently has something wrong with him. It's like, what the hell is wrong with you? Nikki Bella's been off TV for months. Brie got a quick one-and-done program with Charlotte for the belt and lost. We've got Charlotte, Sasha, and Becky wrestling for the championship at WrestleMania. I mean, isn't that what you wanted? You should be celebrating that. Not celebrating because the woman has to retire early to be with her husband. I mean, really now. Raw this past Monday was live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Raw Instapoll. It's more like Raw Insta-ouch. Almost 2,000 of you voted in this poll. I noticed there's more votes the angrier you are. I see a trend here. 89% thumbs down. 11% thumbs up. By far the most lopsided poll we've ever done. This was just such a boring show. It was a boring show. You're 2 weeks out from WrestleMania. You can't be putting out a show like this. I'm sorry. 3 hours of this, and look at what this show was, okay? They open up with a great 20-minute match between Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. I cannot say enough good things about this match, finish aside. Just really, really good stuff. This was the main event, and it opened the show. After that, it was all downhill. Look at the matches they followed this up with. I wrote all the matches down here, okay? Big E against Rusev, which at least makes sense, right? It's New Day and League of Nations, even though I'm not enamored with that match, but that's the match at WrestleMania, so fine. Big E against Rusev. Chris Jericho against Fandango. Fandango, yes, he's still employed. Stardust, Zack Ryder, and Sin Cara in a triple threat match. Charlotte against Natty, which is okay, except for how quickly it went. Bubba Ray Dudley against R-Truth. And in the main event, Braun Strowman, and you should stop me right there because the words main event and Braun Strowman should not ever go together. And I'm sure Braun Strowman is a very nice guy. He is not the worst big guy that they've ever put out there unprepared when he has no business being out there in main events. Not the worst. Okay? I know I'm setting the bar really low here, but you know, Braun Strowman is not the giant Gonzalez, okay? So that's some faint praise for him. The fact is, he still sucks, and he has no business being in main events. But here he is again, and this is at least his second main event in the last few weeks. Braun Strowman against Dean Ambrose is the main event on this show. That's the best they could come up with 2 weeks before WrestleMania, that card that I just read to you. And it puzzles them, I'm sure, that the crowd in Philadelphia, which is not all that different than the crowd the last few weeks, that crowd in Philadelphia treated the Wells Fargo Center like a library? Really? That's a shock to them? They're upset that Vince McMahon comes out to no reaction and Stephanie McMahon comes out to no reaction? Now, on the bright side, AJ Styles has just been absolutely killing it since coming over to WWE. He is easily the best full-time performer in the entire company, at least so long as Seth Rollins is still out. His match with Owens ended with a distraction roll-up. You know my thoughts on that. But the distraction roll-up can be used in certain situations. Here, it made sense the way it was done. Chris Jericho comes out, he's on the mic, he's going, AJ Styles! And AJ, like a fool, is distracted by this. He's staring at Jericho instead of worrying about his opponent. And Owens rolled him up for the win. Okay? It made sense in a way. Aside from the fact that they did the exact same finish on SmackDown the week before. And that made AJ Styles look stupid for falling for it a second straight time. And that wasn't even the worst of it. Fast forward to hour two, and we have Jericho against Fandango. WrestleMania rematch, they build it. All that does, by the way, is illustrate what a fucking terrible idea that match was. What was it, 2 years ago now, 3 years ago? Yeah, Fandango's come a long way since then, hasn't he, right? Big win over Jericho. I'm glad they used that. Anyway, Jericho against Fandango. Now AJ Styles comes out to cause the distraction. And he's on the microphone going, Y2 jackass? Oh, what a clever insult. The only problem is, it doesn't work. Fandango rolls him up, he kicks out, and he beats him with the Codebreaker, 1-2-3. Jericho won anyway. What a doofus this AJ Styles turned out to be. So that made no sense. We found out they're doing a multi-man match, as I feared they might, at WrestleMania for the Intercontinental title, which to me is just a wasted opportunity. They have a ready-made feud. They have a ready-made issue with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And Sami Zayn is the newest guy on the roster. So you should be working, whether, I don't care if it's Sami Zayn or Baron Corbin or whoever. I mean, I'm a Sami Zayn fan, but it could be anybody. He's the new guy on the roster. The spotlight should be on him. You've got to give people a reason to look at this guy and go, hey, this guy's pretty good, right? He's pretty impressive. I think it's a lot easier to do that in a one-on-one environment than just shoving him into a fucking seven-man match with a bunch of guys who have no business wrestling for a championship. I mean, let's look at the logic of this here. You have the Intercontinental title, and they've tried to make the Intercontinental title, to make the U.S. title mean something, right? They've tried. So you like to think that if somebody is wrestling for the championship, then there's a reason for them to be wrestling for the championship. I ask you, what has Stardust done recently? What has Zack Ryder done recently? What has Sin Cara done recently to earn this kind of a spot at WrestleMania? I mean, I know there's a lot of guys who are hurt. I know there's a lot of guys who are injured, and that altered a lot of their plans, but you've got a 20-man battle royal to fill. Okay, you got plenty of spots in that battle royal. And like I said, you've got a ready-made issue between two of the guys in this match. And if Neville didn't get hurt, you know what? I would have been okay if they wanted it to be a triple threat and had Neville and Zayn and Owens, and it would have been a great match. And I'm not saying this is going to be a terrible match, but I'm saying this match should not have been made to begin with. That's my problem with it. I mean, here's the other issue that I see here, okay? You have Ryback against Kalisto for the U.S. title at WrestleMania. I don't see anybody clamoring for that match. Nobody cares about that match. Why is that not the multi-man match? That's the title that John Cena made so important over the last year. Or they tried to, and they did. They did a good job for a while with that U.S. belt. Shouldn't they all want a shot at that championship? Shouldn't they all want to be the U.S. champion? Let Zayn and Owens open the show. Owens retains. They can keep the feud going. And I know some people have said, like on Twitter, they said, Solomonster, there's no need to rush into this. Why blow off their feud right away? Have you seen this show lately? Have you seen this show? My patience is wearing thin. All the old rules go out the window. Okay? So, if you've got something pretty good, you go with it. Second of all, they can feud now. It's fine, because eventually they're going to be feuding over the WWE title. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen right away. Some people are going to laugh at that, and go ahead, laugh away. There are people who would be laughing at the idea that fucking Kevin Steen and El Generico would be even where they are now on Monday Night Raw. Okay? The game has changed. And you'd be surprised who gets the nod and who gets the push when guys get hurt. So you can laugh and mock all you want to, and it could be 2 years down the road, it could be 3 years down the road, but eventually it's going to happen. And those two are going to be feuding for the championship. You can always revisit this feud. This feud will never die. It's like Steen once said, right, in their feud on the Indies or in Ring of Honor or wherever it was, we're destined to do this forever, and they will. This feud is not going to go away. And if you're worried that people, well, not everybody knows who Sami Zayn is, you're right. Not everybody knows who Sami Zayn is because not everybody watches Ring of Honor. Not everybody watches NXT. There's actually a very distinct difference between the NXT audience and the Raw audience. Yeah, there's some overlap there, but not as much as you would think. But they take the time to do these incredible video packages for Shane McMahon, as they should, because Shane McMahon is in maybe the biggest match on the entire card at WrestleMania, so they should make him out to be a big deal, and they should tell people, hey, this guy's been gone for 7 years, you may not know who he is, you may not know why he's a big deal, here's why. They had a couple of really good Shane McMahon video packages on this show. Why couldn't they do some video packages for Sami Zayn? When they did the video packages on NXT to build up their previous matches, they did an incredible job with those. That was some of the best video package work that they've done. I mean, they've got pictures with Zayn and Owens going back to when they had fucking pimples on their face. When they were in their teens. So, is it really that hard? I mean, Zayn made his debut a couple weeks ago. They had a solid 3 weeks to start building up Sami Zayn and telling people who this guy is and the history between him and Kevin Owens, and they can show highlights of the matches they had on those NXT TakeOver shows. You know, you could put the effort in and educate people, like they're doing with Shane McMahon, about why Sami Zayn hates Kevin Owens so much. It's not that fucking hard. So I don't want to hear that as an excuse. Well, people don't know who he is. Well, tell people who he is. Right? When there's a problem, there's a solution to the problem. And the solution to the problem in this case, it's not that hard. Now, the other issue with this match, they're having a ladder match. Do they not have enough guys on the injured list as it is? I mean, I'm seeing reports now that Miz may have been injured at a house show last night, although I see no verification, so it could be complete bullshit. But it wouldn't shock me. Luke Harper, we know, is hurt. Neville's hurt. All these people are hurt. Do they really need to shove 7 guys in a ladder match for no reason? Alberto Del Rio is another one. He's been off the live events. He, too, is apparently dealing with some sort of injury. It might be a lower back injury. And I mentioned Harper. He may be out for up to 6 months with a knee injury. And he didn't do anything except plant his leg. I saw the footage of what happened. It's not like he did a tope or something and he landed on his knee. It's a simple movement. And now he's going to be gone for up to half a year. Neville's out with a broken ankle. Is this really the smartest idea right now? Did you really need to do this? They've given Neville spot in the match, by the way, to Zack Ryder. I can't even say anything about Tyler Breeze in this case because Zack Ryder beat Tyler Breeze on main event a few weeks ago. So it actually makes perfect sense that he would get the spot over Tyler Breeze. Not that I think that sort of logic actually went into making that decision. I don't think it did. I'm not stupid enough to believe that. But I'm happy at least to offer some kind of an explanation for it, since they never will. So that's my thoughts on the Intercontinental title match. Terry Funk made a cameo on the show. He presented Dean Ambrose with a chainsaw to use in his match with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. He should use it to cut this show in half, so I only have to sit through 90 minutes each week. That would be nice. And speaking of which, I have to mention this, a little off topic here, but how many of you have seen the promo for the Walking Dead finale next weekend? It's an episode tonight, but the finale is next weekend. Naturally, it's the same night as WrestleMania. I watched that. It's about 30 seconds. And it looks like Dean Ambrose and Negan will be sharing the same weapon of choice that weekend, the old barbed wire baseball bat. I'm very nervous. I'm very nervous about that finale. And I'm bummed, because I won't be able to watch it until after I get home from Dallas. There was a segment with The Big Show and The Social Outcast that ended with Kane chokeslamming Big Show off the second rope. Yes, Kane and Big Show. It's not too late to do that quicksand match I proposed a few years back. Vince McMahon came out to silence to make an announcement about the Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania. He said, and he said this with a straight face, mind you, that Shane McMahon is probably the most formidable opponent that The Undertaker has ever met at WrestleMania. What? He said this. He was not joking. He said this, like I said, with a straight face. They may have set the Guinness World Record for the most simultaneous eye rolls in an arena. I'm pretty sure they did. Somebody should submit that to Guinness, and they should be certified. Okay. Now, I suddenly thought that maybe the word formidable doesn't mean what I think it means, so I looked up the definition just to make sure that I'm not crazy. Okay, formidable. Inspiring fear or respect for being impressively large, powerful, intense, or capable. Someone buy that man a dictionary. So Vince then announced that if Undertaker does not beat Shane McMahon, he will never again wrestle at WrestleMania, that being The Undertaker. Now, that's a hell of a way to go out if, let's say, Undertaker lays down to screw Vince and takes the loss, but there is one glaring problem with this scenario, as many, 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 many of you have pointed out to me, and that is that if Shane wins, what is stopping him from simply overturning that stipulation the next night on Raw and saying, Undertaker, you will wrestle at WrestleMania next year? In theory, there's nothing stopping him from doing that. Now, the other weird thing about this match now, when you look at it, there really is no great outcome here for the fans. Either Undertaker wins, which means the Authority lives on, which is the worst possible outcome, or Shane wins, and the Undertaker can't wrestle ever again at WrestleMania. And unless you absolutely hate the Undertaker, and not everybody likes the guy, but unless you're one of those people, neither is a very appealing scenario here. The only thing I hope now is that it just doesn't result in a dead crowd for this match, because they're not going to know who to cheer for. I mean, you find that sometimes in babyface against babyface matches where it's a big match, but people don't know who to cheer for, so they just kind of sit there and they're quiet. And I look at this and I say, there really is no positive outcome here. And I look at Triple H and Roman Reigns, and I don't know which match is going to go on last. I'm assuming it'll be Triple H and Roman Reigns. And there really is no great outcome for the fans in that match, too. I mean, I guess they'll cheer. Maybe they'll cheer if Triple H wins, or maybe not, but they're certainly not going to cheer for Roman if he wins. So I don't think we're getting much of a happy ending at WrestleMania this year. Maybe they'll have some big angle planned, or somebody will come back and they'll get a big pop. But I look at both of these main events here, and I don't think the fans are going to be happy with whatever ends up happening. And that's just how, you know, that's what they've painted themselves into, you know, with these matches. Dean Ambrose against Braun Strowman. You know you have a winner of a main event when the fans chant that this is boring. And Dean Ambrose, who normally gets some pretty big reactions, got no such reaction here. He got no reaction at all. Ambrose ended the match with a chair shot to Strowman for the DQ. He gave Braun Strowman dirty deeds on the chair. That sounds like a nasty sex position or something. He really does have to change that name. I still vote for the straitjacket. Whoever thought this would be a good idea for a main event deserves to be put in a fucking straitjacket. That's how this show ended. It ended with Dean Ambrose getting DQ'd. It ended with him staring at Paul Heyman, who was at ringside to do commentary, which just illustrates how fucking awful this was, because I didn't even realize that Paul Heyman was on commentary. I can't praise him. I can't say he did a great job. I completely forgot he was even on commentary for this match. I'm sure we are headed for contract signing hell this Monday on the go-home show for at least one of these matches, if not more than one. That's their usual MO. And I guess we'll see. We got one show left, not counting SmackDown. Actually, I don't even think there is a... Is there even a SmackDown this week? I don't know that there is. They may be cutting in from Access, but... let's be honest, it doesn't matter. Raw's the only show that matters, and we got one show left until WrestleMania. Luke Harper was injured in the post-show dark match. There are rumors of a torn ACL. We don't know what the exact injury is because WWE has not said a word about it, which is kind of weird. Normally by now there'll be some kind of a report up on their website with the doctor. We don't know. Harper hasn't said anything. It's not like he's a big tweeter anyway. WWE has said nothing official, but he was taken off the live events this weekend. I think it was Mike Johnson over at PW Insider said that the word backstage was that the injury is worse than originally feared and that he could be out anywhere from 5 to 6 months. And so that sucks. Of all the members of the Wyatt family, I mean, Bray Wyatt is the leader. He's also dealing with some back issues recently. But you've got Luke Harper, you've got Eric Rowan, and you've got Braun Strowman. And I don't wish injury upon anybody, because that's just stupid. But of all the members for the Wyatt family to go down, for it to be Luke Harper, that's a big blow. It's a big blow to him. It's a big blow to the Wyatt family. Not that they were doing much with them. But he's the workhorse of that group, and I think he and Bray both. I mean, they have big breakout potential, I think, if they ever go babyface, or if they ever want to just kind of put their muscle behind them. Whether it's an entire gimmick overhaul or whatever, Luke Harper can more than hold his own. I mean, if he's not the most underrated guy in that roster, he's one of the top three most underrated guys they have on that roster. And I guess maybe the only solace is the fact that they weren't doing anything with the Wyatt family. I keep reading these reports, I don't know where they're coming from, that, well, the Wyatt, they got big plans for the Wyatts. They actually do have big plans for the Wyatt family. You got to wait and see. And if that's the case, I don't know what this does to their plans. I can only go by what I've seen them do with the Wyatt family on television now for months and months and months, and they've done nothing. And whatever plan they had for Bray and Brock at Mania obviously got changed. The Wyatts don't even have a match going into WrestleMania. I have no idea if they're even going to be in the Battle Royal. We know Luke Harper won't be now. So maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they weren't doing anything with him anyway. Let him take some time off and come back, and hopefully then they'll have a plan. But the Invisible Assassin claims yet another victim on the WWE roster. It's only going to get worse. And one person tweeted me and blamed me because I made that crack all those months ago about my voodoo doll. I was going to put a voodoo curse on them. And I did. I admit, I did. The problem is now I don't know how to take it off.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
I enjoyed the hell out of NXT this week. I thought it was one of the stronger shows they've done in a while. Aside from the fact that the first thing we saw on this show was The Drifter. That's not how I would have started things. He wrestled Johnny Gargano straight from the Evolve show I reviewed at the top of the podcast, even though this was taped weeks ago. So maybe he's a time traveler. He landed here at Full Sail and Aerostar is in the bathroom somewhere. Gargano beat him with a roll-up. And the Drifter, now no longer undefeated, he just lost his temper. He beat Gargano up all over ringside until Apollo Crews, not as smiley as he normally is, so he's finally getting the message. He ran out to make the save. They haven't announced anything officially, but I could see this being added to the takeover card. Rich Swann against Finn Balor in a non-title match. This was to shine up Balor before his big match with Joe at TakeOver, but Swann looked real good here. His theme song is really catchy. He put on a little dance routine before the match. He did a split. Reminded me of R-Truth, which All due respect to R-Truth, is not the person I would want to be compared to most on the main roster. I think he could go much further and do much better than that. At one point, Balor was on, he was either on the top rope or the middle rope, and Swan jumped up. He was standing in the ring. He jumped up into the air and did a Hurricane Rana, which is very impressive. Champion won in the end with the coup de grace, followed by the brain buster for the pin. We got a video package showing Shinsuke Nakamura meeting Triple H and Vince McMahon at Titan Tower. This was something. Vince is all like, welcome back, Kenzo Suzuki. Where's the woman? Where's the woman? What was the woman's name that was with Kenzo, his wife? It was Kenzo and, I forgot her name. Anyway, welcome back, Kenzo. Alexa Bliss beat Sarah Dobson, who also wrestles as Crazy Mary Dobson. The crowd chanted Crazy Mary at her. That's how I knew that. She came off the top with a flying body press at one point and smashed her knees right into Alexa's face on the way down. That did not look fun. Alexa wasn't bleeding or anything, but she kept grabbing her nose for the rest of the match. And Bliss won with the Sparkle Splash. Backstage, Alex Reyes tried to get a word with Samoa Joe, but Joe had no time for his shit and walked away. Bull Dempsey was walking out for his match against Danny Burch. Joe came out behind him, choked him out in the aisleway. Joe got in the ring. He choked out Danny Burch. And then he just started screaming into the camera for Finn Balor. And, you know, I'm taking your title at TakeOver. I mean, he looked maniacal. That's the best Samoa Joe. Maniacal Samoa Joe is the best Samoa Joe. We got a fantastic video package on Jason Jordan and Chad Gable. When I was ranting before about the multi-man match at WrestleMania, and I talked about the great Shane McMahon video packages on Raw last week, I said they've done some great ones on NXT as well, like on the Sami Zayn and the Kevin Owens stuff. This was right up there. This was really, really good stuff. It had footage of their amateur wrestling days, talked about Gable going to the Olympics in 2012 and how much it hurt each of them when they lost. You know, Gable lost at the Olympics, Jordan when he lost his first amateur match because he had been undefeated. They know what it's like to lose, and at TakeOver, they will not lose. That was the message here. Go out of your way to watch this. It's well worth it, and it will give you some background that you did not know about these guys. And it will help you, you know, it'll help you gain an appreciation, I think, for them. And it helps investing in these characters. I mean, and I'm sure they're going to replay this package during the match, or before the match, I should say, at TakeOver. But again, seek it out. It's amazing how much more invested I am in the NXT roster overall than I am in the main roster guys. There really isn't anybody on the main roster I would say that I'm invested in. Like, I care about the character. I care about if they win or lose. I don't really give a shit about anybody on the main roster. I like Brock Lesnar. I guess maybe he would be the closest thing. I really don't want to see the guy lose. I like Dean Ambrose, but do I care if he wins or loses? Am I invested in his character? Not really. You know, not really. They call him the Lunatic Fringe. I mean, when you really think about it, what's he a lunatic for? Like, what makes him so crazy? What has Dean Ambrose done that is so balls to the wall, off the wall crazy, right? Like, they have these names for all these guys, and they kind of have characters, but they don't, I don't know. I don't know if they're not allowed to, or if it's just the lack of any real quality promo time or what it is, but I don't really care about anybody on the main roster. On NXT, there's a bunch of people I care about. I care about Bayley, care about Asuka, care about Jordan and Gable, Sami Zayn, who's maybe the greatest babyface in the world, especially now that Daniel Bryan is retired. There's a lot of guys I care about. So it's just amazing when you just consider main roster NXT and you look at them side by side. Maybe I'm the only one, maybe other people disagree with me, but that's how I feel. We got a video for a new character called No Way Jose, who is going to be played by a guy named Manny Garcia. He apparently used to be a ballroom dancer, or did some ballroom dancing. It reads to me like a Latin Fandango, which long-term just has death written all over it. We'll see how it plays out. But this could be one of those things like a Tyler Breeze, that even if he does really well for himself in NXT, you know that once he goes to the main roster, it's just he ain't going nowhere. So, we'll see. Main event was a rematch from TakeOver London. Asuka against Emma. I liked the London match better, but this was really good. Emma took a beating, came back. Asuka sold for a while, made a comeback. She had Emma in the a standing ankle lock. So, Emma's hopping on one leg. Asuka's got her other ankle. and Asuka turns it into a German suplex with Emma's ankle still bent behind her. That was different. Asuka lock, Emma forced to tap out. Asuka gets the big win, which she should, because she is challenging for the championship at TakeOver, which brings us to NXT TakeOver Dallas predictions, because this is the last podcast we're doing before the show on Friday night. This Friday is NXT TakeOver Dallas. It's taking place at the Convention Center, which fits about 10,000 people, although for this show with the setup, I think they said they're expecting about 8,000 or 9,000, which is still a very healthy crowd. I mean, there's some Raw shows that do 8,000 or 9,000. I think they could have easily filled the American Airlines Center, which is where the Hall of Fame is. That's where Raw is. You know, we'll be there for Raw on Monday. I think with this card, they could have easily filled the American Airlines Center. You got people coming in from all over the world. I'm not sure why they didn't do it, unless it just maybe the building wasn't available that night. You know, they're already doing the Hall of Fame there on Saturday and Raw on Monday. But I tend to like the smaller venues myself, so I'm not complaining. I'm just surprised. But I'm stoked to be there live for this. Look, at the end of this weekend, anybody who's gone to WrestleMania weekend before and does all the different shows, and if you do the conventions, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun because you get to meet a lot of people, you get to hang out with your buddies, even if you have a really shitty WrestleMania. And I think the last 2 years, WrestleMania has been pretty good. I thought WrestleMania 29 was shit, but I thought 30 and 31 were very strong shows. In fact, I think 30 was probably the strongest top-to-bottom WrestleMania card maybe in a decade. And I stand by that. So it's not like we've had a bunch of bad WrestleManias recently, but it's, you know, like this year we have a kind of a weak card, let's be honest. I mean, the WrestleMania card is very weak. The NXT TakeOver card for that audience, it's almost like a dream card. I mean, you look up and down the card with these matches, and you know the Raw after WrestleMania is going to be a lot of fun because of that crowd. It's always fun. So for me, WrestleMania isn't even the biggest deal next weekend. This is the show I'm looking forward to the most. I can honestly say there isn't a single match on that WrestleMania card that I'm looking forward to more than I am the top matches on this show. This is a stacked lineup. And what's great about it is, you know, they found just the right mix of special attractions, like, you know, Nakamura and the debut of Austin Aries, with, you know, balancing that with matches that have been built up over a long period of time. People have been waiting to see Jordan and Gable win those tag team belts. They resisted putting them on Kaz and Enzo, and they instead built up Dash and Dawson enough to where when these belts finally change hands, the people are going to just explode. And you have Bayley has had that title since August. She's knocked down everybody they put in front of her, and at the same time, Asuka has been on this path of destruction. She's been built up like a wrecking machine since the day she arrived. She's undefeated, and here we are with the two best women they have wrestling for the championship, as it should be. And I like what they've done with Balor and Joe. It would have been easy for them to knock Samoa Joe down a few pegs and put somebody else in this spot, being that he lost the first match, but they've built up Joe as this killer who'll do anything to win the title. You know, they've done a great job with this from top to bottom. So we have Shinsuke Nakamura making his NXT debut against Sami Zayn. I think that this will probably go on last, I would think, because this is the biggest match on the card. I mean, there's no championships on the line here. But again, to this audience, Nakamura's debut is a very big deal. And this will be Sami Zayn's swan song, his final NXT match. Nakamura has said that he has settled on a new theme song and it's perfect and he can't wait to debut it. So he'll have new theme music, obviously. But otherwise, if you look at the vignettes on TV, he's got the same gear. He looks the same. It's going to be the same Nakamura going out there. And I don't know that he and Zayn have ever had a match before. I mean, Nakamura's been around for a long time, even before he took off as this big charismatic superstar. So it's possible that maybe him and Generico had a match at some point that I'm not aware of. But to my knowledge, I think this is their first ever match. And I don't doubt that they're going to go out there and they're going to tear the fucking house down. I am very much looking forward to this match. And I think it's a slam dunk. Nakamura obviously gets the win. There's no need for Sami Zayn to win, especially since he's the guy going out of the territory, so to speak. We have Finn Balor defending the NXT title against Samoa Joe in a rematch from TakeOver London. I think Finn Balor is going to retain the championship. He's my pick. I think he retains the title with an assist from Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson. I think Bullet Club is coming in on this show. The Balor Club officially forms here. I don't know if you would call it a heel turn, per se, since everybody's going to lose their minds and cheer them anyway if and when this happens. But I think, you know, if Hideo Itami is due back soon, he could say that it was Balor or it was the Demon that attacked him last year and put him out of action. You could also set up Nakamura maybe as a challenger for the title if Hideo's not ready. But, you know, even though he would still be the NXT champion, I still think you debut those three on Raw the night after WrestleMania. You know, there have been lots of guys, Kevin Owens being one, who have been the NXT champion, who have debuted on the main roster and still finished out their NXT commitments for another, whatever, month or two or three, maybe in some cases. What I would do is have all three of them take out AJ Styles on Raw the night after WrestleMania. You know, if Styles beat Jericho at Mania to end that feud, which I've enjoyed the Chris Jericho, AJ Styles stuff. This is going to be their fourth match, I think, now. This should be the end. I know normally at WrestleMania, you think, oh, this is, you know, sometimes they'll finish a feud and sometimes they won't. You know, typically, historically, feuds climax at WrestleMania. That doesn't always happen now, but sometimes it does. Like, I was pitching Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens as a match. That's an example of, you know, their first main roster match would be at WrestleMania. It'd be like Bret and Owen. It's not like Bret and Owen's feud culminated at WrestleMania. In a lot of ways, it kicked off at WrestleMania. It's okay to do that every now and then. But at Mania this year, I think this needs to be it for Jericho and Styles. Styles needs to win. And then the very next night, you've got a brand new program to start. One that already has some history. Now, WWE has not been shy about mentioning the Bullet Club on TV. The announcers on NXT a couple weeks ago flat out mentioned the Bullet Club, right? They mentioned them, they did a whole article on them on their website. They're not hiding from it. Now, if they want to, they can acknowledge that Styles once replaced Balor as the leader of that group and was taken out. I mean, they don't have to mention that. I'm just saying they can if they wanted to. It's not a big deal either way. It just gives the story some continuity. Now you've got the Balor Club on Raw. You've got three fresh faces, two new faces for a tag team division that desperately needs some new faces. And if Kaz and Enzo, let's say, come up soon, now you've got two new tag teams that you can add to the New Day and the Usos and the Dudleys and the League of Nations and I guess R-Truth and Goldust now if they're officially a team. Balor's been down at NXT since 2014. He's gotten somewhat stale recently. I will sometimes get emails from people saying, he's boring. What do people see in Finn Balor? He's boring. He's not that good on the mic. I think they're selling him a little short. I still think he's one of the best in the world. It's just that when you come to WWE, when you come to NXT, you got to dial it back. You know, you got to tone it down a little bit. And the Finn Balor that we're seeing here is not exactly the Prince Devitt that people remember from New Japan or the Indies or whatever. Even right down to the creativity that he would have with the different body paints and the different characters. You know, I think one thing I think that does make him stale is they don't play up the Demon enough. And so if you're not going to make a big deal about the Demon, then why can't he come out and wear body paint, you know, different body paint on every TakeOver show? Why can't he come out and be dressed like this character and that character? And forget copyrights and all that bullshit. He doesn't have to be fucking Spider-Man or Venom, but he can come out, you know, dressed in different gear. He can come out with different body paint. I feel like, nope, you're the Demon. This is what you are. But they don't play it up enough. And maybe they have a chance to do that here. Like I said, if Hideo came back and Hideo was like, it was the Demon who attacked me. And it's almost like he's got this split personality where we learn that Finn and the Demon are not one and the same. And when he's the Demon, he does some demonic things. I know, what a concept, right? The Demon does demonic things. When he comes out as the Demon on these TakeOver shows, he's the same Finn Balor. His moveset is the same. Everything is the same. There's no difference there. So either play up the Demon and make a big deal about it, or let the guy be creative and come out with different body paint and do some things that maybe he's not allowed to do right now. But I'll stick up for Finn Balor when people make that argument, because I think the guy's fucking great. We're just not seeing all, I think, of what he's capable of on NXT. And so he's gotten stale in a lot of ways. But he's the one guy I don't worry too much about in terms of getting fucked over on the main roster, because they have so much invested in him. I think they're paying him very well, but they've built him up, and I think he'll be fine. I think he'll be okay. But I think that would be the right way to handle it, as far as him and the Balor Club and debuting them and not just retaining the title, but being on Raw the next night. Now, Joe, you know, I pitched an idea months ago on the podcast for Joe to come in as Triple H's hired gun, you know, given the NXT connection between them, to take out Roman Reigns. I think I even originally pitched it as an alternate main event for WrestleMania, like to really shake things up and get some new blood on the main roster and get a really good heel in Joe, who maybe could help Roman in that respect. Having that as a WrestleMania main event where Joe is almost like a Triple H surrogate, and that was when I just really didn't have an interest in seeing Triple H himself wrestle in the WrestleMania main event. I still think, though, it's a good idea, the whole hired gun thing with Joe and Triple H. You know, if they're dead set against turning Roman, which I still think is the number one thing they should do, which is turn him heel, if they don't want to do that, and when I say they, I mean Vince, then I think this would be the way to go. So even if Finn Balor debuts on Raw with the other two guys on Raw the next night, that doesn't mean that Samoa Joe can't get a main roster call-up also. I think there's a good chance we see both of them get called up next week. And I think NXT will be okay. You know, they brought in Nakamura. They've got Austin Aries. I think before long they'll have Bobby Roode in NXT. I believe that's where he'll end up. They've got Apollo Crews, who they can do more with. And they've got a Tommy, should be back soon, hopefully. So they have, you know, people who can take the spots of Sami Zayn and a Finn Balor and a Samoa Joe if they all leave. So, anyway, that's my call of the main event. Balor retains, and don't be shocked if we see him and Joe both on the main roster within the next 7 or 8 days. Bayley defends her NXT Women's Championship against Asuka. Bayley has held that title since TakeOver Brooklyn when she beat Sasha Banks, and she's beaten a whole bunch of people. She beat Nia Jax, right? She slayed the monster in London. And now she's up against a monster of a different kind. I am going to go with Bayley. I think Bayley is going to retain the championship here, and I have nothing to base that off of other than I think most people probably expect Asuka to take the title here, and I think that this will be the first of several matches between them, and I think that Bayley will retain. I think Asuka will have her first loss and may go on an absolute tear after that. Not like turning heel or anything, but she just, because, you know, it's such a big deal to her if you follow her posts on Instagram, like for the character, like, I must win, I cannot lose. It's all about respect and honor, and maybe it's a Japanese thing. But she's posted some really, like, long, deep stuff on Instagram that people have linked me to. And I like that, because to her, to Asuka on the show, winning the championship is the most important thing. It is so important to this woman, and what a novel concept, I know, building it up where winning the championship is everything. But I feel like it's her first shot at the title. I just don't think she's going to pull it off. Not that it would be the wrong time, because God knows, I mean, that crowd will eat it up if Asuka wins. Or maybe not. I mean, I don't know what the fan support's going to be like in this match. They're both babyfaces. Asuka obviously has a huge following. Bayley is very, very popular. And I don't know, maybe Asuka's kicking her ass and people start booing her because they don't want to see Bayley get beat up. You know, I don't know. I don't know how the crowd's going to go. It's going to be very interesting to find what the split is, if there is any, between Bayley and Asuka when it comes to the crowd in that building. But I feel like it's her first title opportunity. She's going to fall short. They're going to continue the feud. And at some point, Asuka is going to win the championship, maybe in the next match. But I don't know. My gut just tells me that Bayley is holding on to it here. So I predict that she will retain. The Revival, Dash and Dawson, defend the NXT Tag Team titles against American Alpha, Jason Jordan, and Chad Gable. Jason Jordan and Chad Gable have to win the belts here. They have to. It's set up perfectly. And I know I've said that before, right? I said that going back to last summer with Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy. Oh, it would be so perfect. They have to win the belts in Brooklyn. It's going to be great. And they didn't even do the match. They put him in a six-man tag at the TV tapings. They weren't even on the TakeOver special. And that's what kind of made me think, well, maybe they're going to call him up because they had Raw in Barclays the next night or 2 nights later. Maybe they're saving them for their Raw debut. That was in August, and they're still not on the main roster. But I feel like this time, this is it right here. The timing is perfect. These guys are the best tag team they've got down there. They're incredibly over. They're incredibly... I mean, look, nobody's going to look at them and go, ah, you know, why do those guys have the belts? I can't think of two more deserving guys to carry the tag team belts in that brand right now than these two. So I think the place is going to go nuts. I think the roof's going to come off when they win. I think they do win, and we have new tag team champions. Austin Aries makes his in-ring NXT debut against Baron Corbin. I got to go with Aries here. We have seen Corbin take him out, lay him out. Aries has yet to get any sort of retribution. He is the new guy. Hopefully they're not just bringing him in simply to put over all the new guys and not do anything else, because I think that would be a mistake. I think Austin Aries can be a big player on NXT, and this being his first match, he has to win. And I know he's a lot smaller than Baron Corbin, but so what? I think Austin Aries has to win. I think he will win. He's my pick. And so those are my predictions. It's a clean sweep for the babyfaces, but partly because you have two babyface versus babyface matches on this show. So I think that sort of skews things a little bit. You normally don't have two matches like that on the same card. So obviously, yeah, you have Bayley and Asuka. Who's going to win? I predict the babyface will win that match. Oh, really? Okay. You have Nakamura against Sami Zayn. Who's going to win? Got to go with the babyface again. Not that far-fetched to think that we may have a clean sweep for the babyfaces here on this show. But I'm really looking forward to it. Impact. There's no major news to report here. Just to follow up, though, on the Bobby Roode, Eric Young stuff from last week, according to PW Insider, Bobby Roode was very upset with TNA over late pay. This is my shocked face. You can't see it right now. I am stunned. I am stunned that TNA would be late in paying some of their talent. So he was very upset about that. He's not some Joe Schmo. I mean, he's one of the biggest guys they have on that roster. They supposedly got him all caught up on pay, so he's not behind or anything. He's got all of his money now. And he had agreed to a new deal, maybe verbally, I guess. But something happened. What PW Insider claims are, quote, more frustrations. Whether that involves money, who knows. Something happened, and he opted to leave. He changed his mind. Eric Young was upset with what TNA offered him on his new contract, especially they're bringing in a bunch of new talents. I guess it deals that are either at the same level or even higher than the level that Eric Young was at. And Eric Young's been with that company since day one. And he voiced his displeasure, and TNA flat out said to him, do you want to stay or do you want to test the free agent waters? And that's when he said, I'm going to test the free agent waters. I'm out of here. And so both of them are free agents. Both have signed on to wrestle each other at the next House of Hardcore show in May. That's Tommy Dreamer's promotion. I don't think that would stop WWE from signing either one of them if they really wanted to. Like, oh, they have an indie booking in May, and so therefore we're not going to see them in NXT before then. That's not stopped WWE before, okay? Let us not forget AJ Styles. They let him finish up his indie dates after they worked out an agreement with him. Samoa Joe, he worked indies, I think, for a few months after he had signed on with WWE, while he had already debuted. They let him finish up his commitments. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And I do think Bobby Roode for sure. If I had to make a prediction, I think Bobby Roode for sure ends up in NXT. Eric Young, I don't know. I know he obviously has an interest in going there. He did an interview, I think, with IGN and said as much. And, you know, if he does, then I guess they'll find a role for him. But I think there's a lot more potential, main roster potential, in Bobby Roode. And he's almost 40. And there's really no time to waste. If he's going to make a move, or if WWE is going to make a move, then make a move. You know, you're not going to wait a year or two. It's now or never. Ring of Honor, I've missed the show the last couple of weeks. I did finally have a chance to watch this week's show this morning. Actually, right before I started recording, I finished watching it on their website. Didn't realize they were doing tapings from Vegas, so I liked the arena. I liked the setting. And I enjoyed the main event. It was the Young Bucks against Hiroshi Tanahashi and Michael Elgin. They have some New Japan talent. They had, for example, Tomohiro Ishii wrestled on the show. He had a match with, ACH? Veda Scott's guy. Why did I forget his name all of a sudden? Was it Cedric Alexander? I think it was Cedric Alexander. Now I'm going to hear from people because they all look the same, right? Tanahashi won the match with the high fly flow. I think it might have been on Nick Jackson. But these guys, you know, they work very well together. The usual Young Bucks insanity, super kicks galore. Tanahashi's always fun to watch. I've warmed to Michael Elgin. I never looked at him as the most interesting man in the world, but, you know, he's known for his power spots, and, you know, everybody worked well here. It was a very fun main event. Lucha Underground. This was the big Aztec Warfare show. Took up the entire show. It was the only match, and not surprisingly, I thought Aztec Warfare was awesome. I enjoyed it very much. Match of the year so far, although that may change after next weekend. The way they do their Rumble, it's like their version of the Royal Rumble. The way they do it, it's pinfalls and submissions only. There's no over-the-top rope stuff. Famous B, who we've seen some vignettes for over the last few weeks, he was out there with a hot blonde. He was wearing like a fur coat. He's out there with a hot blonde scouting for clients. This was the debut of Rey Mysterio. He and Phoenix, the Lucha Underground champion, started the match. It was Phoenix's title that was on the line. Once Joey Ryan came out, he handcuffed himself to that guardrail outside the ring, which, you know, smart strategy. Nobody can eliminate him, right, if he's standing up handcuffed to the guardrail. As soon as I saw that, I knew somebody was coming out and ripping the guardrail apart. I didn't know if it was going to be Matanza or Cage. I figured it was going to be one of the two. And they did not disappoint. I was surprised to see King Cuerno bounced out of there as early as he was by Mysterio. They did continue the story with Cage and Johnny Mundo. Mundo threw him through the window to Katrina's office. He did the same thing to Alberto Del Rio last season, so that must be his thing, throwing people through that window. Cage did come back, and he laid him out with Weapon X on the floor, rolled him inside. Mundo got pinned, but Mundo came back with a cinder block. He broke it over Cage's head, and he was pinned by Taya. Taya was part of this whole thing. And I'm willing to overlook the fact that she pinned Cage only because the guy got hit in the head with a fucking cinder block, so, you know, it's okay. Masquerita Sagrada came out. Matt Stryker had a horrific line on commentary about, we should call him a paragraph because he's too short to be an essay. Oh my God, somebody please cut the wire to this guy's headset. Drago came out. He went right after Jack Evans, who's been tormenting him for weeks now, calling himself the Dragon Slayer. So that's another story that played out here. I said last week, you know, one of the things I loved about this match and why it reminded me of that Rumble in 92, which I talk about all the time, but why I talk about it is because they had a lot of big names in there, but they had a lot of different stories. And when all these stories kind of mix and they're all involved, it makes the match that much more fun. So this, you know, Drago and Jack Evans, they're not in the middle of a main event feud or anything like that. It's a mid-card feud, but it's been going on for a few weeks, and that played itself out here as well. And so that's one of the things I liked about this match. Aerostar eliminated Jack Evans after a Canadian Destroyer off the top rope that looked so brutal I feared for his life. He got spiked headfirst into the mat, killed, dead. Mil Muertes was out, number 20. He was the final entrant, or so we thought. And he got jumped from behind by Pentagon Jr. Now, earlier in the show, Katrina had told Pentagon he would not be welcome. He would not be allowed to take part in Aztec Warfare. So this was his little fuck you to the both of them. Puma and Rey double-teamed Mil Muertes in the ring, and Rey pinned him. He pinned Mil Muertes after a top rope splash. So as quickly as he entered, he was eliminated. And Katrina now is furious. She is absolutely beside herself outside the ring. She blames Vampiro. She calls him out on commentary. Vampiro, of course, is Pentagon's master, El Maestro, as they call him. See, I'm working on my Spanish. Katrina yells at Vamp. She's yelling at him, and she tells him to, and I quote, get the fuck out of here. I love that woman. And then she slaps him. So her best Stephanie McMahon impersonation. And then at long last, after missing the entire season so far, except for those little vignettes they've been doing outside the temple, Dario Cueto made his return to the temple to a hero's welcome. El Jefe is here, he said. He says, we're not done here yet because there's one more entrant, and it's his brother, Matanza Cueto. He's calling him the monster, Matanza Cueto. Yeah, give it a few weeks. It'll go from Matanza Cueto to Matanza. It's like when Rikishi debuted. It was Rikishi Fatu. I don't know why I kept calling him Fatu. Actually, it wasn't Fatu. It was Rakishi. That was the whole thing. I love Jim Ross, but when Rikishi first debuted, he kept calling him Rakishi. Rakishi. It's like a combination of Rock and Fatu. Somehow he merged them together, like in The Fly. He put them in the chamber and he merged them into one. But eventually Rikishi Fatu became Rikishi. Eventually Alexander Rusev became Rusev. I know this is different. This is Lucha Underground. This is not Vince McMahon, but still, Eventually that will be shortened. So Matanza comes out. Last week I said he reminded me of Bane. Now I look at him with that mask. It's a pretty badass mask, I have to say. I don't know how he breathes in that thing. But I look at that mask and he reminds me for some reason of Jason Voorhees in space when they did that Jason X movie. It was like Jason 10. They call it Jason X. And I'm sure only like three people listening to the show have probably ever seen it. Jason X was terrible. Although I have to say, one of the coolest kills in a slasher movie, or one of the coolest kills in any of the Friday the 13th movies, was actually in Jason X. Now, remember, they're in space. Was it a woman or a man? Might have been a woman. It was one of the, like, the lab assistants or something is sitting there. And Jason comes up from behind her. I know I'm spoiling it, but so what? He grabs this woman by the hair, and he puts her face down into, like, what was that substance? It was, like, liquid nitrogen, I think it was. And he puts her face into the liquid nitrogen, and you get a camera angle from, like, in the liquid nitrogen looking up, and her face freezes. So then he pulls her up, her face is completely frozen, and he smashes her face on the desk, and her face breaks into a million pieces. It was actually pretty fucking cool. So the movie sucked. But I will give them credit, at least, that was a very clever kill there in that movie. So, if you ever are going to see the movie, I know I just spoiled it, but watch that scene. That's probably the only redeeming thing about that entire movie. But, the other thing about that movie is the mask that he was wearing looked fucking cool. And that's what this mask reminded me of. So, anyway. Matanza's out there. He looks like a psychotic welder in that costume. None of the men left in this match know what to make of this guy. He immediately eliminates Phoenix with a spinning power slam. Well, that's what I'm calling it until they come up with a better name for it. It's a spinning power slam. So that guarantees that we're going to have a new Lucha Underground champion because he just pinned the champion. So a very short run there for Phoenix of about a week, I guess. He gives the Mac. Now the Mac is a big boy. He's a big boy. Mac flips him the bird, gives him the stunner. Apparently Mac thinks he's Stone Cold Steve Austin. Okay. Has no effect on Matanza. He gives the Mac a high angle, and maybe it was just the way the Mac took it, but it was a high angle German suplex. If the Mac is, I'm being conservative here, 300 pounds, and he's probably closer maybe to 350, he came down on the back of his neck with all of that weight. It looked awful. It looked cool, but it looked awful. So the Mac is gone. German suplex, bridging German suplex to Aerostar, he's gone. Tejano tries to choke him out with the bull rope. He comes charging at Matanza now for a jumping Hurricane Rana. Matanza, though, turns it into a sit-down powerbomb and pins him. His own move. He beat Tejano with his own move. He then turns his attention to Joey Ryan on the outside. Joey Ryan sees this. He's like, oh, fuck. Because he's handcuffed to the guardrail. He can't go anywhere. So Matanza goes out, and he rips the bar off from the railing. He rolls Joey Ryan into the ring, gives him a series of rolling gut-wrench suplexes. He never releases it. So he gives him a gut wrench, he rolls his own body over Joey Ryan, picks him right back up, gives him another one, rolls back over his body, gives him one more, and he pins him. He gives a gigantic choke slam to Dragon Azteca Jr., who also made his debut in this match, pinned him. Chavo Guerrero, one of the all-time greats, who no doubt could have beaten Frank Gotch and Lou Thesz with both hands tied behind his back and blindfolded, according to Matt Stryker. He tried to make a deal with Dario Cueto outside the ring. He's like, hey, we're all in this together, right? And Dario's smiling in agreement, and Chavo gets in the ring. But as soon as Chavo gets into the ring, the smile disappeared from Dario's face. We see him on camera. He gives the cutthroat hand gesture to Matanza. And Matanza knocks him down, and he gives Chavo Guerrero a standing shooting star press. Now, you know, we're used to seeing guys like Neville and Puma pull off moves like that. And Matanza's big. He's not tall, but he's a big guy. So to see a big, thick, wide guy like that pull off a standing shooting star press, it's pretty impressive. And he pinned Chavo. And that's one of the reasons I love this so much. How many times in WWE and in other places have we seen them bring in the giant monster? Guys who are much, much taller than Matanza is. And they try to get them over. They tried it with Kali because he was big and tall. Undertaker even put him over in a pay-per-view match clean with a brain chop. He chopped the Undertaker in the head and he pinned him, I think with his foot on his chest. Undertaker lost clean on SmackDown once to a power slam, I think it was, against Vladimir Kozlov. All these guys they tried to make because they're big. Ooh, they're big. Right? The problem is, those guys all sucked in the ring. They sucked. And the people didn't want to see them. That's why both of them ended up as comedy characters. Now, Matanza may not be the biggest guy in the world, and I know some of you had a problem buying into him as the monster. There was a whole debate in our Facebook group. Oh, well, I can't buy him as a monster because he's just not big and he's not tall. And I get that. This guy was built up for so long, you're thinking to yourself, this guy's got to be 10 feet tall. And here he walks out, he's not even 6 feet tall. I think he's about 5'10". But he's still a big guy, and he's bigger than most of the guys on that Lucha Underground roster, and I think it's important to keep that in mind here. We're not talking about a roster with Big Show and Kane. Okay, because if you put Matanza in the ring on day one with Big Show and Kane, you're killing the gimmick. Most of the guys in Lucha Underground, they're small, they're high flyers. But I'm okay with this. I'm okay with him as the choice. As long as they continue to portray him like they did here as this unstoppable monster, that's all that matters. And the guy can work. He's athletic. And he's able to pull off moves like that. That's what separates him from Giant Gonzalez and Great Khali and Zeus and the Yeti and Braun Strowman and all the other guys they put out there who may have looked big and scary, but when the bell rang, it sucked. You know, and I said earlier in my Raw review, Braun Strowman is not the worst I've ever seen by any means, but he still sucks. And he has no business being in main events on Monday Night Raw. He's not ready for that. You can't talk about how you don't want to see Undertaker versus Sting because the build-up might be good, but when the bell rings, it's going to suck. They're old, they're slow, the match is not going to be any good. You can't be one of those people who talks about that and has that opinion. You know, all of a sudden these people are so concerned about work rate. I love it. You can't do that, but then talk about how, well, they should have gotten a 7-foot-tall guy to play Matanza if they can't find one who can work for more than 2 minutes without embarrassing themselves. I mean, I haven't seen much of this guy. There's Jeff Cobb. You know, I talked about him last week, but from what I saw here, he's going to be just fine in this role. So, German Suplex takes out Puma. It's down to Matanza and Rey Mysterio, both of whom are wrestling in their very first match here on Lucha Underground. This is their debut. Rey hits a 619. He goes up top for a Hurricane Rana. Matanza catches him, gets him up in a powerbomb position, and then kind of throws him up into the air a little bit, catches him in position for the spinning power slam, hits it, and gets the pin. Matanza is your new Lucha Underground champion. That is how you book a monster. Matanza had one of the greatest debuts of all time on this show, right? I would put this right up there with Kane. I'll tell you what, it might even be better than Kane. Kane beat up one guy on his first night. Matanza eliminated 9 men in a row, including Phoenix, Prince Puma, and Rey Mysterio, 3 of the biggest names on that roster. This was an excellent match, and they made a new star in one night. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Johnny from Arkansas. Do you think WWE could have chosen someone different to induct the fabulous Freebirds into the Hall of Fame other than the New Day? Yeah, I mean, they could have had, you know, Kevin Von Erich do it. Would make sense, I think, to go with somebody they have a history with. But they want who they want with these things, and they wanted somebody from the current roster. I mean, look, Jerry Lawler wanted Lance Russell to induct him into the Hall of Fame because Lance Russell is the guy who got Lawler into wrestling in the first place. He gave him his big break. But Kevin Dunn said, well, nobody would know who Lance Russell is, so let's go with William Shatner instead, because Shatner did one segment on Raw with Lawler in 1994. Yeah, New Day's been using the Freebird rule on TV for all their title defenses, so, you know, it makes sense. I'm fine with it. Hayes already thinks he's a black dude anyway. Maybe they'll make him the fourth member of New Day. David from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. After revisiting the Monday Night War DVDs and watching the Bret Hart stuff, I was thinking about how much of a difference he would have made in the invasion angle. What would you have done with him during that time? Well, I mean, if Bret didn't get hurt, and if he would have made amends with Vince in 2001 and not waited another 9 years to bury the hatchet, he could have been a central figure in that invasion angle. that they did that year. Absolutely. I mean, what I would have done, well, first of all, I wouldn't have done the invasion the way they did it. But you're talking perfect world scenario here, right? Brett doesn't get hurt. If he doesn't take another 9 years to forgive Vince. And if WWE can grab at least some of those big names and buy out their contracts and bring them in a little bit earlier, let's say Hogan, Nash, Flair, Goldberg, or even just three of those guys, and let's say you have Bischoff leading a real invasion, I would sit Bret Hart out at the beginning of it and at some point have Vince McMahon go on TV and say that he's got a secret weapon, you know, that's going to help WWE prevail, and his name is Bret the Hitman Hart, and people get all excited, and that leads to Bret finally showing up on Raw, let's say a week later, or 2 weeks later, or whatever, and instead, he knocks Vince the fuck out, and he walks out, and he kind of stays unaffiliated. He, you know, Bret's not a WCW guy, but he's not a WWE guy at that time either, and you don't really know who his allegiance is to. You figure, well, he's never going to work for Vince McMahon, right? But in the end, he does. He sides with WWE because even after everything, he's still a WWE guy. And Bret, it's very important to Bret, his legacy. He's talked about that before. He wants to be remembered and respected, and legacy is a big deal to him. So I think creating the story where he's, you know, he gets that last shot in on Vince, he punches him out on TV, and then he stays unaffiliated. People don't know where he is. He's going to end up. He's kind of a free agent. But in the end, he sides with WWE because that's his home. And that's where the fans want him to be. And he wants to be the big conquering, returning hero. I think Bret would probably be cool with that idea too. And so in the end, he, like I said, he sides with WWE. And I would have him align with Austin and Rock and Kurt Angle and Undertaker and all those guys against the WCW guys. And I would build to that big supercard at WrestleMania the following year. I wouldn't just make a fucking faction called the Alliance, because now they're just another faction on the show, a faction that, when they did the angle, was mostly mid-card guys. You know, you had Booker T and DDP, and then after that, who'd you have? You had Hugh Morris? You had Billy Kidman? And who else? Canyon? I mean, Canyon was a talented guy, but, you know, I mean, you had a collection of mid-card WCW guys. I'm talking about doing a real fucking invasion here. So, you know, you build to, and WrestleMania would be the most likely place for it. Maybe not. Maybe they want to get two big pay-per-view buy rates out of it, so they do an invasion pay-per-view, but don't blow it off in July. You know, save the invasion for, you know, after WrestleMania the following year, or whenever you want to do it, but you build to that supercard. Now, again, this is perfect world scenario here. That's probably what I would have done with Bret. He can't just become a WWE guy without first going after Vince and kind of getting that out of the way first. And that plants the doubt about where he'll end up. And in the end, he comes back as the big babyface hero. That's his home. That's where he belongs. Brian from New York. I was watching a Raw from either 1998 or 99, and they had one of the old Don't Try This at Home ads that they used to run. This one had Shawn Michaels saying, "I've had over a dozen concussions. With everything that has happened with Daniel Bryan and others, knowing that Shawn came back for another 8 years, suffering God knows how many more, what are your thoughts on this? Say WWE had wanted to get him to wrestle one more match, with him admitting this almost 20 years ago, would they clear him?" Well, I mean, obviously they would. It's not, you know, they let him wrestle for 8 years. Why all of a sudden would they be like, you know what, Shawn? That promo you did back in 1997, I don't know that we could let you back. Of course they would let him. Supposedly, they tried to get him back for the Royal Rumble match this year, and he turned him down. They keep trying to get him to come back, and he keeps saying no. I respect him for it. You know, he lost to The Undertaker. It was a retirement match, and that was in 2010, so we're coming up on 6 years now, and he has stuck to his guns. One of the few people who had a retirement match and actually took the stipulation to heart. You know, now, if he suddenly had an interest for whatever reason in coming back, maybe he made some more bad investments like he did back during that JBL angle and he needed money, and now Shawn has to come back and wrestle, believe me, they would welcome him back with open arms. Does that make them hypocrites? Yes, of course it does. But if he wanted to come back, he would be back. And not only would he be back, he would be in one of the main event matches this year at WrestleMania. Ben from Sydney, Australia. How would you feel about NXT having its own version of the Royal Rumble with 20 men where you can have special returns from people brought up from the main roster? I'm down for them having their own Rumble. I think you save it for a big takeover special, but I would come up with a different name for it, and I would use Aztec Warfare rules, like Lucha Underground does, just to make it different. So what I mean by that is no over-the-top rope eliminations. That should just be a Royal Rumble thing. You know, at this point, we could say which is better. Was Aztec Warfare better than the Rumble? The answer is yes. But I like the over-the-top rope stipulation for the Rumble, and you can build drama around that. I wouldn't change that, but if NXT was going to do it, I wouldn't adopt over-the-top rope rules. It would be pin or submission only. And like you said, 20 guys instead of 30, you can have a couple of surprise returns. You could have a couple of surprise debuts. You know, new NXT talents. But like I said, save it for a big takeover show and do it. Yeah, why not? John says, lately I've been watching a lot of WCW Monday Nitro, and I couldn't help but notice the ways in which it was different from Raw. Some I liked, like the two different announced teams per hour, their spring break shows in the Disney MGM venues, and replays only happening at the end of a match. Some I didn't like, mainly Tony Schiavone at times, the Nitro Girl segments, and their use of stars from the sports world. Would you like to see WWE implement some of these things on their shows? Yes, I would. And I have said so before on this podcast. In fact, I think it was back when I did episode 127, where I laid out all my plans for WWE if I was in charge. At the time, Raw was still 2 hours, right? The good old days of 2010. I'm pretty sure it was on that show. I mean, if it wasn't, it was later on. But I talked about two announced teams. I pitched the idea of two announced teams, one for each hour of Raw. I don't think you need a brand split to have a split announce crew on Raw. Now the show is 3 hours. I still think you could do that. You could format the show in such a way where maybe at 9:30 on the dot, you bring out Mauro Ranallo and Jerry Lawler to take over for the remainder of the show. You know, first, they need to ditch the three-man format for anything other than maybe pay-per-views. Raw does not need three announcers. SmackDown does not need three announcers. Byron Saxton adds nothing to the show. You can find another role for him. Let Cole and JBL do the first half. Because I also think if you split the announce crews as awful and as unbearable as Cole and JBL can be, I think there's something there where if they're sharing the responsibilities, and let's say Mauro and Lawler is going to take over, I think there's something there that motivates them to do better. Maybe they wouldn't be as obnoxious as they sometimes are if they had a little bit of competition. It all goes back to the whole idea. A little bit of competition is a good thing. And I think the same can be said for the announcing on these shows. You let Cole and JBL do the first half, or let them do the second half. Doesn't matter what order you do it in. Mauro and King handle the other half. So that's how I would do the announcing. I mean, as far as other stuff, I mean, I know it's a PG product now, and I doubt WCW made any money on those spring break shows because they weren't charging for tickets. I don't think. But I would find a way to make some money off of it, and like once a year, do a spring break themed show outdoors somewhere. You know, like I take the show to a few different places each year. Break up the monotony of the shows. I mean, I know it's like, well, they're selling out buildings, so why would you do that? You know what? Because it makes the show fun. That's why. And because if they do it once a year or twice a year or three times a year, it's not going to bankrupt them. Okay, or if you're going to go to a smaller venue, charge higher ticket prices. You know, you'll make up the money somehow. But I think a few times a year, it's worth it to kind of get out of the usual buildings with the usual stage and the setup and the Titantron and take it, you know, go back to the Manhattan Center. That's another idea I pitched a few years ago. Every January, when Raw has its anniversary, go back to the Manhattan Center. Okay, and if the Grand Ballroom upstairs is not feasible as a taping location anymore, I've heard that before where, you know, you can't tape TV. It's like eight floors up and it's not conducive to doing a television taping. Then fine. On the first floor, you have the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is even bigger. You could fit more people in there. And you can absolutely do a taping from there. I don't want to hear, oh, you can't do a taping from there. Of course you can. You've done it before. So do it in the Hammerstein Ballroom. As far as replays at the end of matches, I mean, that's a novel idea. Obviously, I'm in favor of that. Here's another example. I just thought of this, okay? Look at the sets on Raw and SmackDown. Is there any difference at all in the sets between Raw and SmackDown? Now, the answer is no. because they invested all these millions of dollars years ago when they went HD and all these bulbs and these lights, and they can put ads up on the screen and they can morph it and change it and turn it into whatever they want to, but it's the same set. It's not different. It's the same. Now, you don't need to, just like you don't have to split the brands to have split announce teams, you don't have to split the brands, which I am not in favor of, to give each show its own distinct identity. SmackDown used to have the giant fist. Remember that? Where'd that fist go? I'll tell you where it went. They shoved it up our asses. That's where the fist went. There's no creativity there anymore. They make more money now than at any point in the history of the company, but they've scaled back on enough of the little things that when you add them all up, it adds up to one big thing. You know, like, these are not the biggest problems they have, okay? Injuries. Injuries are a far bigger problem for them right now. Creative is a far bigger problem for them. You know, what set they use, what color the fucking ropes are. I mean, these are minor things, but they should be all for making things fun. They've sucked the fun out of Monday Night Raw. That's why the shows are so boring. You're supposed to have fun watching these shows. Back in the day, it was Vince. He had his inner circle and maybe a few other people, Russo, whoever. Now, they're this giant corporation with all these different people working for them. I think they could figure out logistically how to make these things happen. They have enough people working for the company now, more than ever before. They can figure it out. DJ from South Boston, Virginia. I didn't even know there was a South Boston, Virginia. I've been binge-watching the Attitude Era for months now, and I got up to Backlash and felt they waited a month too late to put the title on The Rock. Do you feel that if they would have had the Backlash main event at WrestleMania 2000 instead, that it would have been a better show? Absolutely. Of course. I mean, but I think the thing was, Austin wasn't ready for WrestleMania. This was only a few months after Austin had his neck surgery. I mean, he was literally in a halo for the first, I think, 3 months. And they wanted, also they wanted a McMahon in every corner. We need Vince and Linda and Shane and Stephanie. So they had to make it a four-way. Now, if Austin was healthy enough to do a run in a WrestleMania, then it should have been just Rock against Triple H and just do what you did at Backlash. You know, just do it at WrestleMania instead. I mean, it should have been Rock versus Triple H anyway, but Austin running in and killing everybody with chair shots and then sharing a beer with The Rock after the show, that's how you end a WrestleMania. But, I mean, he was only 2 months out of neck surgery by that point. He was probably still wearing the halo, and so they held off a month. Now, if he was healthy, I would have done it in Mania, had a gimmick match with Rock and Triple H at Backlash, and then do the third match, the Iron Man match, the way they did at Judgment Day. You get three matches out of it, like they did with Triple H and Batista in 2005. There's no law that says you can't have the same match three times in a row on pay-per-view. If you've got the two hottest guys in the company and the fans are into it, you can do fucking five matches in a row. So that's probably how I would have done it. But again, Austin just wasn't healthy, and they want that. The whole, one of the selling points of that WrestleMania show was the McMahon family drama, and it's always about the McMahons, and so that's why they did the four-way. Brian from Louisville, Kentucky, which WWE Hall of Fame speech is your favorite? Bobby the Brain Heenan, without question. Jake the Snake was another really good one, and Medusa. I thought Medusa last year gave a hell of a speech. Joey from South Carolina, buy or sell on Father James Mitchell in NXT or Lucha Underground? In my opinion, Mitchell may be the most gifted talker who is not currently dead, retired, or named Paul Heyman. I think he could be a huge asset in either promotion, but which would you prefer to see him in? The Sinister Minister. I mean, come on, that's the perfect fit for Lucha Underground. Are you kidding me? I'm going to buy on him there, sell on NXT. Just the very nature of the show. I think they could do way more with the guy on Lucha Underground. You know, for the character, there literally is no better wrestling show for that character to be on now than Lucha Underground, where you have demons, and you have the undead, and spacemen. I mean, come on. Daryl from Hartford, Connecticut, buy or sell on Kurt Angle or Daniel Bryan in their WWE runs on who is more entertaining in the ring and on the mic, who is more marketable, and who played both the face and heel roles better of the two. I am a big fan of both, but this is an easy one for me. You got to buy on Kurt Angle and sell on Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan was an absolutely tremendous wrestler, in the ring, like technically all the moves that he knew and the smooth transitions from one to the other. Kurt Angle, he's no slouch, right? Kurt Angle was pretty fucking good in the ring too in his prime. He still is good. It's not like, you know, Kurt's slower, he's older, but he can still go. He still has the moves. So I would say as a wrestler, they're pretty evenly matched. Although I would probably give Kurt the nod. I mean, you talk about who's the more marketable of the two. Kurt Angle's a fucking Olympic gold medalist. It doesn't get much more marketable than that. So, and you know, he's got the All-American gimmick, and people, you know, lap that shit up. So I think Kurt's probably more marketable. Kurt, you know, in the ring, we're talking in their prime here. Every bit as good as Daniel Bryan, maybe even a little bit better. Who played the face and heel roles better of the two? Kurt could do anything. Kurt Angle was such a... I mean, he can be a comedy heel, but somehow still be taken seriously. I think because of the Olympic background, people knew he can go, and he, you know, he's a dangerous guy in the ring. But that's one of my favorite incarnations all time with Kurt Angle, you know, when he would be coming out in his debut year, and he... You know, I still remember when he came out for the match with the Godfather with a prophylactic in his hand, and they were on some college campus somewhere. Everything this guy did turned to gold. And even later on, during the invasion angle, one of the few shining beacons of that angle was the comedy interplay with him and Steve Austin. I mean, it was great. And when Kurt got serious and he was doing the team angle thing and he was feuding with guys like Brock Lesnar and all that kind of stuff, when he was serious, he was like the wrestling machine. It was a different kind of Kurt Angle, but it was every bit as good. I mean, he can go from being somebody you laughed at to being somebody you were deathly afraid of. You know, and you could boo him and say you suck, or he can come out and be the American hero. So Kurt could do it all. Daniel Bryan, he did well in both roles. I mean, as the heel, he was just a different kind of heel, right? He was a smaller guy, even smaller than Kurt, I think. Well, yeah, I think Kurt, I don't know how tall Kurt is. Kurt's got to be 6 feet, 6'1", I would say. So in terms of height and weight, Kurt had the advantage on him. But Brian, when he was with AJ, remember he was treating her like shit, and he was just being annoying. He was the annoying heel who was so, had just this warped sense of himself. And when he turned, he was one of the best baby faces that the company's ever had in terms of just being able to rally that kind of fan support behind him. He was one of the best underdogs that they've ever had in the history of that company. I don't think Kurt was ever looked at as an underdog. So it was a different kind of heel and face, but when I think who played both sides of the aisle the best, it's Kurt Angle. I mean, there's no contest about it. As great as Brian was, Kurt's got him beat. And Ross, from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Buy or sell on the better show, WrestleMania 6 or WrestleMania 7? That's a good one. I love WrestleMania 6 as a kid growing up. I will admit that was purely because of Hogan against Warrior. I did love the Demolition title change on that show, but apart from those two things and the big crowd, I mean, obviously they had 67 or 68,000 people there. Other than that, it was a pretty bad show. They had a Rockers Orient Express match on there, but they had a much better match at the Royal Rumble the year after. Piper painting himself half black against Bad News Brown, not Piper's finest moment, and the match wasn't anything special. WrestleMania 7 had one of the all-time great Mania matches with Ultimate Warrior against Randy Savage, and I thought an even better post-match angle. I can't rave about that Savage-Elizabeth angle enough, that whole reunion. It was just so well done, and it was the culmination of a years-long storyline. You don't see that anymore. So when they reunited, it meant something. You had people crying and Bobby Heenan making fun of them on commentary. It was fucking awesome. I think Hogan Warrior and Warrior Savage kind of cross each other out, right? Those both of them were great matches. You could say one was better than the other, but each show had one big classic match on there, so they kind of cancel each other out. So then you look at the undercard, and at WrestleMania 7, you had a pretty good little intercontinental title match there between the Big Boss Man and Mr. Perfect. You had the blindfold match between Jake the Snake and Rick Martel, which I know some people shit on, but I thought it was fun. I thought as far as blindfold matches go, they've done others since then, and a lot of the times they're just bad. They're just not good at all. But I thought, the way they were able to manipulate the crowd here the way they did, and I just thought it was well done. I thought it worked. And you had Undertaker's WrestleMania debut, which was not a good match, but historically that's kind of important. So I think I'd give the slight edge to WrestleMania 7. Not by much. I still have a soft spot for 6 because of that main event. But as a card overall, I would give it to WrestleMania 7. And finally here, I am renaming Sad Tweet for 1 week to Disturbing Tweet. I follow Vader on Twitter, and I saw more of him this week than I ever wanted to. A dick pic was posted to his account that showed someone, presumably him, since he never denied it, laying in bed wearing nothing but a pair of Uggs while watching what appeared to be Charlie Rose, of all things, on TV. There's a visual for you. Now, he took it down. He claimed his ex-girlfriend hacked his account and posted the photo. This is one of those times where I don't get why he didn't lie and just say that the photo wasn't him. It was, you know, somebody hacked his account, of course, and it was just some, you know, an explicit photo, a random photo that somebody posted. And because really, who's going to prove that it's him? It'd be very easy for him to just say, that's not me. But he never denied it. He apologized, but he never denied it. So I'm left now with a memory of Mini Vader, very different than the one I had before when they had the midgets on Raw back in 97. Remember, we had Mini Vader and Mini Mankind and Mini Goldust, and that will never be the same for me now. And the best thing I can say about this is at least he's not working stiff anymore.
They're going to be talking about this one for years. This one goes down in the record books and in the annals of the most unbelievably fought, vicious contest seen at WCW. No question.
I asked for a little of WCW's valuable time. I never asked for anything, but I called in my marker on this one. You see, something's either happened or it's about to happen of an unbelievable magnitude. A couple of years ago, I was in Japan wrestling, and I saw a kid named Chris Benoit, and it just flew off the page. That's a horseman. I went to WCW officials. I played a very big part in getting Chris Benoit here. And he's exceeded all of our expectations. And I told him, the first rule is, Chris, anything you want in this sport, the road doesn't rise up to meet any man. You've got to reach out there and take it. But you see, there's an unwritten rule also, a cardinal rule. It doesn't just apply to wrestling or sports. It applies to every aspect of a man's life. Number one, you take care of your family. Rule number two, you don't mess around in another man's family. There's going to come a time in my life and in your life when there's no more cameras, no more TV lights, no more people running up to you at the mall saying, can I have your autograph? And whether you walk away from this great sport or whether you limp away, or whether they roll you away in a wheelchair, the one constant will always be in your life is your family. Well, Chris, I'm just going to ask you one time. Is this obsession with destroying every aspect of Kevin Sullivan's life worth losing your soul?
Wow, that is eerie to listen back to. We are down to our final match here in our WCW Countdown. I've been doing this now for 15 straight weeks, featuring the top 15 best matches in WCW history. And this weekend, of course, is the 15-year anniversary of the final Nitro and the death of WCW officially. That's why I timed it this way. And the final match in the Countdown is from the Great American Bash, June 16, 1996. At the Baltimore Arena in Baltimore, Maryland, Chris Benoit against his arch rival, a man he had legitimate bad blood with, more so later on, not so much at this time, Kevin Sullivan, the Taskmaster, in a Falls Count Anywhere match. Now, let's set the stage here. Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, and Brian Pillman had brought in Benoit to be a member of the Four Horsemen the year before. Pillman ended up in a feud with Kevin Sullivan that led to the infamous I Respect You, Booker Man moment. where Sullivan wrestled Pillman in a strap match, where to win, it's kind of like an I Quit match. You had to get the other guy to say he respects you. Pillman was working his own angle with WCW, doing the loose cannon thing. He ended up leaving and going to WWE. So they slid Benoit essentially into the Pillman role to feud with Kevin Sullivan. Sullivan was part of a group called the Dungeon of Doom, which months before this had formed an alliance with the Horsemen to end Hulkamania. That was their goal. Yes, it was as stupid as it sounds. Of course, they failed. Before the match, Tony Schiavone tells us that Arn Anderson is backing Kevin Sullivan, which is odd. Now, I admit I wasn't watching WCW week to week at the time, so I'm sure there's a story behind this, but okay. So they don't waste any time. Benoit meets Sullivan in the aisle, and we're off to the races. They never even set foot in the ring. Okay, almost immediately, it's over the metal barricade, into the crowd. One takeaway I had from this match is how absolutely atrocious Kevin Sullivan's selling was. Benoit would chop him, he'd punch him, he would just stand there. He wouldn't really react to it. He would just, like, he would stand there and just wait for the next blow, and he would take it, and he would wait for the next blow, and then he would fire back. It was comical. So they brawl all the way up to the concourse, and 3 minutes into this match, they're in the men's bathroom. And Sullivan sticks Benoit's head between the bathroom stall and the door. He slams the door on his head a few times. Dusty Rhodes, whose performance on commentary here is the stuff of legend, he informs us that, you know, the Taskmaster is in his element in the bathroom, if you will. I do a poor Dusty Rhodes impression. So the fans have crowded into the bathroom now. Security is having a bitch of a time trying to hold all these people back. Sullivan goes to shove Benoit's face into one of the urinals, or the commode, as Tony Schiavone called it. But Benoit blocks it. Instead, Benoit wedges Sullivan's head in the stall. He slams the door shut. And then came one of the greatest moments in the history of televised wrestling. Dusty Rhodes spots a woman in the men's bathroom, and he absolutely loses his shit.
Wow. I tell you,
there's a lady. There's a lady in the men's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the men's john right here in Baltimore. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can.
She just stopped off. They got to get some relief here, baby.
I don't even care how the rest of this match goes. It would have made my top 15 just for that clip alone. And he would not let this go for the rest of the match. He made multiple references now to this woman being in the men's bathroom. So Dusty is just, he's so damn excited that this woman stopped off there. Meanwhile, Benoit and Sullivan find a crawl space that's stocked with trash bags full of toilet paper, which Sullivan uses as a weapon on Benoit. He looked like Santa Claus, you know, delivering toilet paper to shitty people. They finally brawl outside the bathroom, where Sullivan picks up a trash can. He drops it on Benoit. Benoit retaliates with the trash can shot of his own. Dusty will not give up on this woman in the men's room. He wants them to make their way over to the ladies' room to see what that looks like in there. They make their way back into the crowd, and Sullivan throws Benoit down the staircase. And Benoit gets back up. Sullivan kicks him low, to which Tony Schiavone says, "Happy Father's Day to Benoit," which is very creepy in hindsight. This match did, in fact, take place on Father's Day, so just want to give that quote some context there. They make it back down to ringside. Now, keep in mind, it's a false count anywhere match, and I don't recall either one of these guys up to this point going for a single fall. This was a grudge match. They didn't want to pin each other. They wanted to beat the shit out of each other. So they're back down by ringside now. Benoit pulls out a table from underneath the ring. He puts it inside. They make their way into the ring for the first time in this match. Benoit sets the table up on the top rope like a platform, the same way Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon did for their finish in their street fight. Benoit gives Sullivan a top rope superplex off the table and finally goes for the pin, and that was enough to score the win. So I think it was one pinfall attempt and one win here in this match. Huge pop, people going nuts. Benoit not finished. He continues to kick Sullivan's ass after the match. Jimmy Hart, who was managing Sullivan at the time, he starts running down the aisle. He's going to go get help, I guess, from the other Dungeon of Doom members. But as he's running down the aisle, he sees Arn Anderson jogging down to ringside. And he's telling Arn, "You got to do something. You got to stop this." And Arn gets in the ring and very violently pulls his fellow horseman off of Sullivan, shoves him down. So Benoit's all like, what the fuck are you doing here? You know, we're on the same side. And Arn tells him, hold up a second. He turns to Sullivan and he punts him right in the ribs. Just punts him to a massive reaction. And Benoit joins in. The two of them now are stomping the crap out of Kevin Sullivan. The crowd in Baltimore just erupted. When they started kicking the crap out of Sullivan, they went nuts. And the other Dungeon of Doom members run down to the ring. You have Big Bubba and Mang and the Barbarian and some guy that looked like Luther Reigns was out there. So they all come down. The Horsemen bail. This was awesome. And my favorite part of the beatdown may have been the constant ringing of the bell. If you've been a wrestling fan longer than 10 years, you remember that anytime there was chaos at ringside, if there was a big brawl, the timekeeper would just furiously ring the bell over and over and over again, almost like, send help for the love of God. Please send help. And watching this, I didn't realize how much I missed that because they just don't do it anymore. At least in WWE, they don't do it anymore. And I really don't know why, but what I've realized in watching this is that in the last few years, what's happened here, they've replaced the bell ringing with that goddamn shaky cam. Think about it. Anytime there's a beatdown of any kind, or Triple H is out there pounding the hell out of Roman Reigns or Dean Ambrose on the announce table, you don't hear the bell. What you see are all the little pieces of corn and shit that you probably just vomited up from the cameraman bobbing up and down, up and down, up and down, over and over and over again. You know, if they're doing that to convey a sense of chaos, which I assume is the reason they're doing it, it's gonna make it even better, right? It would be a hell of a lot more effective and less nauseating for them to just ring the damn bell. Because, you know, if this happened in WWE today, if you took what happened here on this WCW show with these guys, and it happened today, in 2016 in WWE, Anderson and Benoit would have been stomping Kevin Sullivan, and that camera would have been moving up, down, left, right, and center. But we don't need to worry about that, because no one reacts to stuff like this anymore. The crowd reaction you got here, you would not have this on a WWE show today. It would not happen. Now, after this match is where things got real personal between Benoit and Sullivan. Okay, so in real life, Kevin Sullivan was married to Nancy Sullivan, his wife. She played Woman on TV, and she was linked up with the Horsemen. Now, Sullivan was a booker for WCW at the time, so not only was he wrestling, he was booking the show. It was his idea to put Benoit and Nancy together on screen as an item. And they worked a storyline where Benoit had stolen his wife. And as we all know in wrestling, you know, art often imitates life with these things. If you're a wrestler, little PSA for you out there, don't ever bring your wife or your girlfriend into things, because chances are she ain't going to be your wife or your girlfriend for much longer if you do. So Sullivan, you know, he booked his own divorce without even knowing it. Benoit and Nancy got close in real life and started having an affair. Sullivan and Nancy got divorced the year after, and Benoit and her got engaged. So now, they still work together, Benoit and Sullivan. I mean, you know, Sullivan lost a retirement match the year after this to Benoit, so it's not like the two of them couldn't work together. I'm sure it was weird. But, you know, obviously there were issues there. Sullivan was named head booker in WCW in 2000. That's one of the main things, if not the main thing, that led to Benoit leaving WCW for WWE. There was the little story about Mike Graham, I think, threatening to cut their throats or something stupid, and that's why all four of those guys were able to walk out of the company. But Sullivan's ascent to that top booking spot, I think Benoit looked at that and went, I got no future here. He didn't trust that Sullivan had any real desire to push him as a big star. I mean, they put the world title on him as in a desperation move, and Benoit saw right through that, so he gave it up the next night. But, you know, he didn't trust that Sullivan had any real desire to push him as a big star. And why would he? He stole the guy's wife. You know, there were a lot of problems there. Now, people have their conspiracy theories about Kevin Sullivan being the one responsible for killing Benoit and his family. You know, there's the story that he is or was a member of a satanic cult, which I don't believe is true. I mean, people say that, but I don't believe that story is even true, and Sullivan may have even denied it. And even if he was, you know, I mean, so what? Yeah, he was part of a satanic cult. It was called the Dungeon of Doom, and they were so inept, they couldn't even beat Hulk Hogan. So what makes you think that they could pull off something like this? I mean, come on. But the fact that people still believe this nonsense, it's like, You know, I can't even say it surprises me that much. I think people still grasp at straws because they want to believe so badly that Benoit could not possibly be capable of committing such evil acts. So they just reach for whatever theory or possibility that there may be that he didn't do it. So I'm not really surprised that they would concoct the whole theory about Kevin Sullivan. But no, Kevin Sullivan did not murder Chris Benoit or his wife and his child. At worst, he was an idiot for booking a storyline where his wife was fooling around with another guy. I don't know how he could have figured any good would come out of that. But this match was a lot of fun to watch. It's not one of Benoit's technical masterpieces. It's just a wild brawl between two dudes who hate each other. That's really all it is. And I think it's a fine way to conclude this countdown, the final match in our WCW countdown. And just to say a few words about the death of WCW in the final Nitro, I didn't go back and watch the final Nitro. I remember, you know, bits and pieces of it. And obviously, I remember the whole Vince Shane thing. I remember the Sting, Ric Flair main event and them hugging after the match and how sad that was. And yeah, you know, just there being a lot of uncertainty about who was going to have a job and who wasn't going to have a job. It was a lame duck show. It was kind of depressing, I think, thinking back to it. I know there was also a Booker-Scott Steiner match on there that was pretty good where Booker won the championship. But, you know, it was sad. It was more than anything, it was sad to see WCW get to that point. They were bad for a long time before that. There was a period of at least a year and a half. They were going down the tubes. And it was not a sudden thing. It was not like all of a sudden the company started to get bad and then a month later they were dead. They got sick, and then after a while, they were gone. And the thing I miss most about WCW, you know, somebody asked me that question the other day, who was born, I think, in 2002, they said. So they didn't even live through any of the Monday Night War stuff. They don't really know much about WCW except whatever's on the network. And they asked me, like, what do I miss most about it? And I miss the competition. I was never a big WCW fan. I grew up in the Northeast. You know, I was a WWF guy. I would have these passionate arguments with my best friend who would watch Nitro and try to tell me how much of a better show it was, and I'm like, you're a fool. I'm like, Raw is much better. But I would flip, you know, between commercials or if there was something interesting going on with the Overrun and other, you know, NWO attack or Sting coming down from the rafters, I would flip. You know, it piqued my interest. I'd go back and forth. This was before DVR and all that kind of stuff. I mean, unless you had multiple VCRs, you could have a couple of different tapes going. You know, you had to pick one over the other. You couldn't just hop on YouTube or hop on a torrent when the show was over and download the fucking thing. There was no YouTube channel that had clips. So it was a struggle on Monday nights at the peak of the Monday Night Wars when both shows had some good stuff to go back and forth. But it was a lot of fun. It was frustrating. And I wanted to kill Eric Bischoff when he would go on TV and give away the Raw spoilers. I felt the same way Vince McMahon did. But that competition, it led to a lot of fun television. The guys that would jump ship back and forth, you never knew who was going to show up on one show in a given week or the other show. And the fact that, you know, looking back, it made WWF work that much harder to be that much better. You can't take the current WWE product and say that if this were transplanted into 1997, and this was the product they were putting out up against Nitro back then, you put this product up against WCW, WCW's winning the war. They're winning the war, they're doing the invasion angle, not the other way around. So they started to get more risque, and they pushed the envelope, and they had to push new stars, and they were lucky that they had guys like Austin and Rock. They were very fortunate they had talent like that at the time. And Triple H, and Mankind, and The Undertaker, and they had a lot of supporting acts, all of whom got over. I mean, the supporting acts during that era, the Attitude Era, were over more than some of the main event acts today. Everything just clicked. It fired on all cylinders, and you had this new audience that came in. But competition is what spurred that on. That's what I miss most. There's no motivation now for them to get better because they're still making money. Somehow, WWE just continues to make money. They could put on a great Raw. They could put on the most boring, god-awful show that you can imagine. They could put on a show like they did last week, which I thought was no good. But there's no incentive. There's no motivation for them to overhaul things or, well, this is not working, so let's just change everything, right? There's, you know, and people will still ask me, like, I was checking Twitter before I started recording, and I got a tweet from somebody asking me, do I ever think there could be a viable, legitimate number two, like somebody that gives Vince McMahon a run for his money, like real competition? The answer is no. You know, you want to live in a fantasy world, and yeah, if a multi-billionaire comes along and you have a creative guy who's currently in the wrestling business and knows how the wrestling business works, and they hook up somehow, and the billionaire says, I'm going to give you whatever you need. You do your thing. I'm going to back you up. I got connections in the TV business. We're going to get you on ABC, or we're going to get you on a good cable network. Yeah, okay, in a fantasy world, sure. That's what you need. You need money, and you need TV. If you can get money in TV, and you've got the talent, then yes. You can conceivably one day have a company that could give WWE some real legitimate competition. But that's not going to happen. It's never going to happen. And I miss that. And we see now the end result of what happens when you have no competition. TNA and Ring of Honor and even Lucha Underground, they're not competition. I mean, like, Lucha Underground's a great alternative, but they're nowhere close to being a competitor to WWE. And I don't think they ever will be. You know, WWE, it just, they have too much money and they have too much of a head start. And it's just not going to happen. And so that's what I miss most. That to me is the biggest, or one of the biggest, shames about what happened to WCW. Yeah, the biggest shame, obviously, is that it cost so many people so many jobs. And I don't just mean in 2001. I mean in the last 15 years. There's a lot of people who would have had jobs, who did not have jobs. A lot of people who were out of work after that. And because of their ineptitude, because of their own mistakes, they completely just fucked the wrestling business. And you could throw AOL Time Warner, and they all love to, Bischoff and all of them, they all love to throw AOL Time Warner out there. And yes, that I'm sure that was part of it. But it's such a bullshit argument, because at the end of the day, I don't care how many people who work for that company hated wrestling and wish they didn't have WCW in their portfolio and would love to plot to get rid of the company. If WCW was turning a profit and making the kind of money, let's say in 99 and 2000 that they were in 98... I think at their peak, they turned a profit or made like $60 million or something, or $80 million. If they were making that kind of money, believe me, WCW and all the guys that don't like pro wrestling and thumb their nose at pro wrestling, you know, they would have taken a deep breath and they would have huffed and puffed and they would have dealt with it because the company was making money. The company was no longer making money. The ratings started to go down. They made a lot of dumb decisions. They were in the red. All it did... Their mistakes made it very easy for all of the anti-WCW, anti-pro-wrestling forces in that company to say, we're going to cut bait. And ultimately, it was one guy. I mean, it was Jamie Kellner who canceled the TV shows. That's really, at the end of the day, what killed WCW and why, you know, Bischoff wasn't able to get it. But that's why, to just blame it all on the merger and stuff, it's a bullshit argument. It's a crutch. If the company was still making money and making new stars and doing as well as they were in 97, 98, I'm not saying they'd still be around today, but they wouldn't have died in 2001. And that's a sin, what happened to that company. But now that I've depressed everybody, the whole point of the countdown was to focus on the positive. That's why we did the top 15 best matches in WCW. It wasn't all bad. There was a lot of good stuff there. I'm going to post that list up on Facebook. I'll link to it for everybody who wants the full listing of all 15 matches. You should go back. I encourage everybody to go back and watch them. I think pretty much all of them, most if not all of them, are available on the WWE Network. So you can check them all out there. And this was a lot of fun. I don't know if I'm going to do another countdown like this or not. People have asked me to do one for ECW. I was, you know, these matches in WCW I saw. ECW I have not seen nearly as much of, so, you know, it would be a different approach. I'd have to first go back and watch a whole bunch of ECW matches. I don't know if I'm going to do that. We're going to give this a break for a while. I'll think of some ideas and we'll come up with something. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. Of course, you can vote in our Raw poll every Monday night as soon as the show goes off the air. I am flying out to Dallas this Friday. So I'm going to be hitting up all the different events, and of course we have our own event, so the best thing you could do is follow along on Twitter, so that way you'll know where I am, and if, you know, I'm at any of these events, I'll be sure to post up photos and maybe some video and all that stuff. So definitely through Mania Weekend, follow me on there @Solomonster. We are going to record two podcasts in Dallas. We're doing two roundtable shows. Episode 433 will be next weekend, probably on Saturday. It'll drop at some point. That'll have our WrestleMania predictions. It'll be myself, Noah Mark, and Brian Blade. Episode 434, like CM Punk's title reign, that's going to be the show that we're doing live from Frankie's, the sports bar in Dallas. Again, that's Monday, April 4th, the day after WrestleMania. I know some people may be flying home that day, but it was the best time to do this. So that Monday, April 4th, 11 a.m. Central Time, we are going to be doing a live sound-off that may or may not stream live. We'll have a better sense of that next weekend, but if nothing else, it'll be recorded and uploaded immediately afterward. The invitation is up on our Facebook fan page. I'm going to post links up on Twitter and Facebook. Please, if you are going to be in Dallas, if you live nearby, if you think you might be able to make it down, you don't have to RSVP. It's not like it's a requirement, but we're trying to get a sense of how many people might be there. So please, only if you plan to physically be there, you can RSVP on that invitation. I look forward to meeting many of you, some for the very first time. We will be back next weekend, as I said, with the first of two roundtable shows. We'll do predictions and all that fun stuff. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we will see you in Dallas. So until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
You know what annoyed me more than anything else on this show last Monday night? Instead of just calling it Fastlane, they called it WWE Fastlane.
At WWE Fastlane, I'm going to beat you.
Drove me nuts.
You and I are going to have a match at WWE Fastlane.
All night with this. Who talks like that? If aliens landed on Earth and attempted to engage a member of the WWE roster in a conversation, you know what they would think? Holy shit, these creatures are stupid. And then they would exterminate every last one of us.
Salamonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Salamonster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters sound off.